P.S. I Love Hoffman is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Cody.
Why don't you have some fun?
Tommy.
It's a cape thing.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish!
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hey, Hoff fans. Welcome to P.S. I Still Love Hoffman, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm still Brian Rodriguez.
I guess I'm still Kyle Reinfried.
I guess so.
Yeah.
You haven't changed. You haven't,
no.
Maybe you'll just be Kyle one day. Like,
yeah.
Like a one-name
thing.
Well,
I've done the whole, like, Kyle A. Reinfried, Kyle August Reinfried, K. August Reinfried, K. August Reinfried. All of a sudden I realized I was M. Night Shyamalan. So I ended that.
Reinfried.
So now I just, now I do, I mean, I always, like, sign things like write Kyle A. Reinfried. Like the middle. Supposedly, government document-wise, it's better to have a middle initial in there.
Good to know.
Originality. So anyway, yeah. So, sorry, continue.
Well, we're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great Philip Seymour Hoffman movies.
Yeah. He's the best, and he's got some great movies, and we're going to talk another great one today.
Hoffman. It's not a movie that features him a lot in terms of dialogue, but he is on screen a lot.
He's a presence.
He plays Art Howe, real-life person.
Yeah, another real-life person.
And the film, of course, is Moneyball.
Yeah.
Chosen by you, the Hoff fans out there. Fans of State and Maine. That's the other one that we had?
Yeah, that was the other, yeah.
Once it hit Moneyball, I was so just into it. Plus, baseball season started already. Like
baseball, baby.
So it was perfect. It feels like it's our almost baseball opening day.
Yes.
For P.S. I Love Hoffman.
When was Mets opening day? I know Yankees was on Thursday.
Thursday as well. And Mets, as we're recording this, you know, the day before this comes out, Mets are 2-0.
Nice.
Don't want to jinx it. Yankees are 1-1, which sucks because the Orioles really suck. And they lost to the Orioles yesterday.
Happens. First game I ever went to was against the Orioles, and they lost, so.
But, you know, it's so early. Like, Kyle, I know, you know, you're a Yankee fan, but you're more of a football fan, as you said. You're more of a Giants fan.
Wearing a Giants hoodie as we speak, yeah.
And I'm wearing a Clueless t-shirt.
Yeah. So. I'm completely happy with everything the Giants are doing.
So. No, we won't get into that. Yeah. But you know how it is. First game of the season is like the first month of the season in baseball.
Yeah.
So much overreaction, so much, oh my God. Like, if you win at the beginning, everyone thinks you're the best team in the world. If you lose at the beginning, you know,
yeah.
Worst
baseball's
team in the world.
Like theater. Like the second act is when, you know.
Absolutely, and which is kind of the plot of the team today, the Oakland A's, in
yeah.
this exact film. And the thing that they say about baseball, which I love, is that you can't run the clock out, you know? You
yeah.
have to play at least the 9 innings. One thing I wanted to touch on before we dive in, and we'll dive in soon. Remember, guys, this is a rewatch that we're doing commentary on. So you either want to have your Moneyball DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming somewhere. And when we say go, that's when you press play. What do we have today? Blu-ray, DVD?
Blu-ray.
Nice. So,
yeah.
So you owned it? That means you liked it?
Oh, yeah. I love this movie. We reference it a lot.
The one thing I wanted to touch on before we dive into Moneyball here, and we'll do this, we'll have a chat about this more on our mid-month episode,
yeah.
But it was recently Amy Sedaris' birthday.
Yes, it was.
And she was also on Mark
Happy
Maron's
birthday.
Podcast.
Yeah, Mark Maron's, yeah.
Where she talked a lot about Philip Seymour Hoffman, so if you want to do some homework, I usually assign homework on High School Slumber Party, but I'll assign some Philip Seymour Hoffman homework here. Listen to that episode of that podcast. It's called WTF. Right?
What the fuck?
Yeah, I just know it as like Mark Maron's podcast.
Yeah.
I don't like think of it that way.
Yes.
But listen to her episode of that podcast, because like I said, we're going to talk about it more in our mid-month episode.
Yes, definitely. Check it out. It's a fun episode. And I mean, you know, Mark Maron's awesome. Amy Sedaris is awesome. And she shares some good stories about the big guy.
Oh, yeah. And hopefully we'll be talking a lot of Hoffman today, despite maybe him not being the main character of this film.
Yeah. We got a pretty lead actor in this movie of Mr. Brad Pitt, so.
Do you think that you are the chubby Brad Pitt?
I, No. I mean...
Have you ever compared yourself to Brad Pitt?
Yeah, my hair, when I had my long hair. To Brad Pitt when he had his Legends of the Fall hair. So, yes.
So you're kind of like the New Jersey Brad Pitt. Well, you were when you had the long
hair. When I had long hair. No longer. Now I'm just... I don't know what I am anymore. That's why I don't know if I'm Kyle Reinfried.
True. You could be Kyle. You could be a symbol for all we know.
That would be cool. A symbol.
Maybe you would...
I'm Batman.
Would you... When you die...
Yeah.
When you die, would you want to be turned into a food? Like foodie films, you know?
Maybe for... Maybe for an animal? I don't know. Like, not people. I'm not Soylent Green.
I'm trying to think of, you know, what you could be best represented by.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, toss in the ocean, let something eat me.
That's fair.
Yeah. A nice at sea burial. All right, let's start the movie.
First pitch, you ready? First pitch.
Yeah.
Kyle Reinfried.
That was funny.
Okay. I'll count it down if you want. When we say go,
yeah,
you're gonna
yeah.
Press play.
Oh yeah, we're on the. It's the again, just like last
the burst,
time.
Right.
The burst of the Columbia torch, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
you
yeah.
Should be as soon as you press play, we'll press play.
Yes.
3, 2, 1, go. Opening. That Columbia lady.
Yeah, Columbia lady.
It's not the Statue of Liberty. I think I've said this before, because she doesn't have a book, clearly.
Yeah. Did I say this last time, that she looks like the girl from Boy Meets World, and then we had a whole
that
screen. Cool. Yeah, okay.
Did you end up looking at
her? Oh, I did. Long and hard.
Whoa.
No pun intended.
So I love baseball. A little bit of background. Mickey Mantle quote. You're a Mickey Mantle guy, because you like the HBO film 61.
Yes, Billy Crystal, HBO directed movie. But yeah, Johnny Damon before he was a Yankee,
and before he was a Red Sox.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I love baseball, and I love this book, Moneyball, Michael Lewis. It's probably my favorite book of all time. I was so excited when they started talking about doing this film.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, it was a Soderbergh picture.
Yeah. Shout out to Cinemakers when they covered all Soderbergh films.
And this is something Brad Pitt really, really, really wanted to do.
Yeah, this like some of our other favorite movies, like High Fidelity for John Cusack, and well, some other ones are escaping me right now. The point being, it's a movie that like the actor was very passionate about.
Yeah, because even when Soderbergh left, Soderbergh left because he wanted to do it more of I don't want to say documentary style, but he wanted to use real players.
Yeah, like girlfriend experience style.
Yeah.
Like gritty and raw and with...
And the studio was like, yeah, we don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right here, Yankees, A's, they're playing each other and it shows the crazy...
Derek Jeter.
The crazy salary, like, marks there.
That's
there
cool.
There are players who make $30 million today.
Why does baseball allow that versus, like, you know... Like football, where they, you know, then finally
salary caps and stuff. Because football union is one of the weakest, and the baseball union is one of the strongest of all unions.
Huh.
They did a strike. They had a strike for an entire year, you know.
Yeah.
Baseball has no cap. Baseball, it's a guaranteed contract no matter what. You have to pay the entire thing out.
Wow. Oh, Giuliani. Rudy, before he was crazy.
The one thing about baseball contracts is, though, the way they work... If you come up late, like from the minor leagues, you might not hit free agency till you're 29, 30. However, they have arbitration. Like, if you're good, you will get paid $20, $30 million forcibly by, like, a judge.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Yeah, this is the one thing when we covered this on, like, P.S. I Love Hoffman. We had the Godfather himself, Joey Lewandowski, on, because he's a big baseball fan.
Yeah.
And you guys, just like, I mean, Joey, he didn't, like, pick on me, but he was like, Kyle, do you? Like, he just, like, pointed out that I, like, yeah, I don't know. I watch sports for the same reason that I'm watching this right now, entertainment value. And so, I mean, some people could then... start, like, saying, like, oh, you're a front runner, you're only paying attention to your team when they're winning. It's like, well, yeah, I'm paying attention more when they're winning because that's more fun and entertaining.
fair. When
the Giants have had bad seasons or Yankees have had bad seasons or Devils have bad seasons, yeah, I start, like, tuning out, especially you know, I mean, football where it's, you know, 16 episodes, much more cinematic than, like you said, baseball so drawn out.
Yeah. So I'm a Mets fan, so I know suffering very well. I was born in 87.
Yeah,
last
just...
'86.
Oh, so so poetic.
But this is, of course, about the Oakland A's, and I feel like the Oakland A's are like the Mets of the San Francisco Bay Area, because certainly the Giants there, the baseball Giants,
yes,
are more
yes.
popular. You see great shots here of the Oakland Coliseum, which is notoriously one of the worst baseball stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
They still have not been able to secure a deal for a new stadium, so they're still playing there. It was outdated when this movie takes place.
That's crazy. So, yeah, so this opened up in, what, this was 2001,
yeah.
right? That's crazy. So, the Yankees end up going to the World Series that year, and I think they end up losing to the Marlins?
No, 2001, they lose to the Diamondbacks.
Oh, I thought that was 2003 was Marlins. Yeah, Diamondbacks was 2001. I knew it was one or the other.
So, I remember being, you know, I was a hardcore baseball fan at this point. Still am, but definitely here. I remember these teams and not knowing what was going on there. We used to all, not like you know, kids, you know, as kids we used to talk like, how are the A's winning, even before this? Their roster is not that good. And that's a little bit of a misnomer. And you talk about fact versus fiction in this film. They make it seem like Billy Beane, who Brad Pitt plays, they make it seem like he got this like Moneyball idea in this offseason.
Yeah.
But it had been something that they had been
festering.
Yeah, like doing little by little throughout the years.
Yeah.
This is just the year that the author just happened to write the book, and he said he was going to see the A's for a year.
Yeah.
And it was because, how are they winning?
Yeah, exactly. There was already some inspiration for the author. We've been seeing Brad Pitt on screen for a few minutes now, and I just love how the film opened up, and it just already depicts exactly what kind of guy he is, or at least the way. I mean, it's very much Billy Beane wasn't like happy, right, with the way he was portrayed.
Really? No, I think Billy Beane was happy. I think it was Art Howe who wasn't.
Oh,
happy.
I'm sorry, it was Art Howe.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just touched your knee when I was.
You know,
oh my god,
Kyle,
you're
this
right.
is an audio podcast.
Yeah,
no one
they didn't have to
know.
No one had to know that. But I shared it.
So this. I think this movie does a really, really good job.
Yeah.
And I said that fact and fiction thing for a reason. A lot of baseball purists, there's a lot of people who don't like the numbers aspect of baseball. They didn't like this film because, oh, it's not 100% true story. But what the film does, the book to an extent, but definitely the film, is take an incredibly numbers book, an incredibly complex story, and make it enjoyable for someone who necessarily doesn't like baseball.
Yeah, they did baseball's more entertaining, but I think they did a better job with this movie because he's a more talented filmmaker than Anna McKay for The Big Short.
I like The Big Short, but The Big Short is still very technical.
Yes.
This one brings it more home. And I think maybe the Soderbergh film was going to be more like technical like that. Not in that style.
Yeah,
but certainly like more by the book. And look, he's just having a conversation with the owner and saying, I need more money to win. The team that just beat me has a lot more money. And
yeah.
The owner's saying no. Simple, easy. Anyone who's watching this gets okay.
Yeah.
And as you were saying with Brad Pitt playing Billy Beane here, how much he cares. You know, it's so apparent how much he cares.
Yeah. I love, you know, Brad Pitt as an actor. And not even recent years, because even all the way back with 12 Monkeys and True Romance, like, great character actor. But, like, this is just such a great leading role for him, which we really don't see that much out of him anymore.
Well, it's funny, right? You talk about people who have certain advantages. Let's be honest. Brad Pitt, very good-looking guy.
Yeah,
he could have just been a heartthrob the rest of his life.
Yes.
I'm sure he got his early opportunities because he was a good-looking guy.
He's one of my favorite actors.
But he's also really, really good, especially now. You can see through time how he's really worked on his craft.
Just look at it. His mannerisms in the scene. The way he, like, bites, like, his lower lip and, like, and not a... but, like, yeah, he just does, like, he's really just, at this point, mastered... Like, he's on, like, just like we talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman, just that he expresses so much without saying anything.
Yeah.
I mean, Brad Pitt, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman has just that much more of a distinct voice. But here we go. Here's the first scene with the scouts.
Yeah, I love how they dress the scouts. They're so, you know, old school looking.
And all these guys, except for one of them, are real scouts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
The one guy...
I guess that stayed with the Soderbergh thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. That guy at the end in the shot right now with the tan sport coat and the glasses, he was in Fried Green Tomatoes on Food and Films recently. And
wait, so you're telling me this guy's a scout, a close-up guy?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Because they have a great conversation later.
He might be...
Yeah, I think he's probably an actor, because they do the most interacting. The rest of the guys, great.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the way they look, and this... As a book reader, I love this movie. You know how those people say, and Kyle, we make a joke that you and I both don't read a lot of books.
So. I don't, yeah. I wish I did, but I was afraid in the words.
Because you hear so many people like, oh, I read the book, then I saw the movie, the book was better. This movie, to me, was as good as book.
Yeah,
different?
Well, yeah.
Different because it's not a stat thing. Like, there's pages and pages of stats.
But they do a really good balance, and that's what movies have to do. Because honestly, sometimes books are just, like, you know, they take, you know, 4 pages to describe something that you get in, you know.
Sometimes 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Oh, I love this. Yeah, I love this.
It's just he's hearing the same old, same old. This opened up my eyes, and I mean, this is one of those movies that I'm sure a lot of people watched, and then they're just like, I know baseball, like there's movies with it, like you'll watch the, you know, like with some historical significance to us, like, and then you're just like, oh yeah, that's exactly how, you know, that's exactly how it went down, or just even this, like. You know, just everything the scouts are saying, I still don't understand baseball, but it definitely enlightened me a bit.
Yeah, I think it does a great job at that. Now, I want to correct some things that people, like criticisms of this film and of Moneyball, the book. It's not about finding, it's about exactly what he's going to say right here.
that's a trailer.
It's an unfair game. How do you win the unfair game?
that's a trailer line right there.
Yeah. And look, it's not about in this they like on base percentage and walks and stuff like that. A lot of that stuff has been replaced by other stuff now. And that doesn't mean that they were wrong, because even the A's are doing things differently today. Even Billy Beane's doing things differently today. And they're still winning with nobody players.
Yeah.
And so this is not about, like he says, you're the last dog at the bowl, run to the litter, he dies. How do you overcome that?
Yes.
It's not about finding the one thing. It's about being ahead of the curve and finding the next thing that people are overlooking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I just love all the reactions from all these guys at the table. Yeah, supposedly I was reading, I didn't write down his name, but I think it's one of the older gentlemen on the... from Brad Pitt's angle to the left side. One of them's like a longtime Kansas City Royals... scout.
See, yeah, what he's saying though, like, you can't play like the people with different resources. You have to be savvy. And I think it's true in life. It's see, great line, but the more I see it, the more I'm upset about it. It's a small thing. He says, like, we're looking for Fabio.
Yeah.
And he goes, who's Fabio?
Yeah.
Like, he's reading the line. Wouldn't you just be saying it the same way he said it?
Well, I mean, possibly. I don't know, accent difference, like, people say it all.
Yeah, but, like, but that would come from reading. You wouldn't know how it's spelled, you know? But now that you tell me that that's, like, a real scout, I can't blame him too much. He's not an actor. I think it does this so well. Because this is how the book works.
Yeah.
There's about 3 or 4 different lines in the book. Some are not here, but it's Billy today, Billy as a prospect... And then there's a lot of stuff on Bill James, who they talk about later. And Bill James is, like, the first guy to discover these alternate statistics.
Gotcha.
And, like, you get a logo from my Mets here, you know? That's the team scouting Billy, who's going to draft Billy.
So did you guys destroy Billy Beane?
I would say that the Mets are the reason Moneyball exists, because of their mistake.
Yeah. At least. So technically the Mets changed baseball forever.
Well, that's true, too. But, you know, in the narrative of this film, again, Billy Beane did not invent these statistics.
No.
He was the first person to implement it on a mass scale.
Do you think someone else would have eventually?
Yeah, because other people were starting to. Some of his acolytes or some of his peers had already gone to different teams.
Oh, look at that racist logo.
I have to imagine this is actually shot in the Indians' office.
I don't know about that. Actually, one of the things I read was that...
How do you get that logo? I mean, if that's good production value.
Yeah, exactly. It's much cheaper to build that and put it in another hallway than fly everyone to Cleveland. But, supposedly the eight other... I mean, obviously that wasn't... I mean, it's supposed to be a stadium, but it's the inside. I think they're also talking about the outside. But the eight stadiums that we see in this movie, besides Fenway... were shot in the Dodger Stadium and dressed to look like the other stadiums.
I mean, they don't really do like wide stadium like shots anyway, you know.
No, I don't.
Yeah, only in Oakland.
And again, like any like established shot exterior, you can send like one of like, you know, like A crew or, you know, like B crew, C crew, like to go there and get, you know, an exterior shot. And that's not as expensive as flying the whole crew to film, you know, and the actors to film there.
So I was kind of confused about this, and I'm pretty sure in the book this conversation exists on the phone.
Okay.
But that's not as exciting, because, like, why did a GM fly to just have a little conversation like this? But it's prettier this way. That's Mark Shapiro, former GM of the Indians, obviously. I believe he's president of the Blue Jays now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see our first shot of Jonah Hill, who plays a fictional character called Peter Brandt.
Yeah.
Who's mostly based on Paul D. Podesta, who, former Dodgers GM, but he was Billy Bean's assistant. Paul D. Podesta very much was involved in the book and the film. But they decided to combine a couple characters, and he said, I'll help you all you want, but don't use my name because... One, Paul D. Podesta is a really skinny guy, and Jonah Hill's a bigger guy.
Yeah.
One. Two, he didn't come from the Cleveland organization. Like, all this is kind of fiction.
Yeah. Listen, guys, you're very lucky to have Brian explain all this. But,
I think it's better this way because it's not. I don't want a biography all the time. Okay, so it's very ironic, right? Because we discussed the Queen film before. On various podcasts.
Yes.
And that, you and I both know the story, have seen so many documentaries, that we want more of the real thing.
Yes. Well, because, I don't know, because, like you said, like, this happened over, like, a phone call. Not exciting. Not that this is, like, a breathtaking scene, but obviously much more just, you know, great to see these different characters, like, you know, and helping the story that he's seeing Peter Brandt whispering into people's ears and all of this. So, yeah, like, this is fine for this story, but when there's such a precise story of telling the story of Queen that has interesting stories, like, that you don't have to change how the band met because it's just as interesting, you know.
And I think, let's be honest, Freddie Mercury and Queen, to some extent, before the film, had gained legendary status.
Yes.
Most people aren't going to know Billy Bean going in.
No.
Aren't certainly going to know Paul D. Podesta going in. So this is okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. They just do such a great job with the camera work, with the following the eye lines and him coming up.
This is one of Jonah Hill's standout roles that, like, took him from...
Yeah, well, this movie had so many Oscar nominations. Unfortunately, no wins. Very surprising. But, he was nominated, Jonah Hill, for Best Supporting
Which
Actor.
Which I think shocked a lot of people at the time.
Yes.
Now maybe not so
really, much. You know, super bad? First job ever. Oh, sorry, anywhere.
And, like, that was very different. They talk about how he, you know, he's an Ivy Leaguer. He's, like, studied economics.
Yeah.
Very common in baseball today for, like, front offices to be that way. But front offices used to just essentially be ex-players.
Yeah, exactly.
And that makes
more
sense. You, on paper, that would make sense, right?
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, they still... obviously do that, but then it's very interesting that, like, you know, to see this, the players, you know, that will then go and work for either the team that they were always with, or, you know, work for another ball club, or, I mean, in all sports, or you see the guys that become, you know, the announcers, or the guys that end up coaching, or, you know, or the guys, you know, then you just have your Michael Strahans that just do everything and
everything. Yeah, that's very rare. I just want to correct something I said earlier. Like, Paul DePodesta did work for the Indians at one point, but it was like 96, 97.
You're lucky. I was going to fact check that, so.
No, and he had already been there for a fair amount of time when Moneyball started.
Gotcha.
He wasn't like the boy wonder he just picked out in that offseason to change everything.
Again, like, I mean, and the fact that he said, like, listen, God, yeah, do what you want, don't use my name, like, he even understands.
He said he would help him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't, like, wasn't like, fuck you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, Jonah Hill, this is when he was still, like, I don't know, now I watch, like, Jonah Hill, and I just get, like, some arrogance from him, but this is just chubby, innocent
He's still trying
Jonah.
To prove himself.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not just, as we said, the Superbad guy.
Yeah.
Superbad, a film you guest starred on my podcast, High School Slumber Party.
Very true, yeah.
With our high school friend.
Wesley.
And jaded
Vina.
Person. Wesley Vina.
<Jaded. laughs> It's just like the Aerosmith song, Jaded.
Yeah, one of the silver pants.
Yes.
And I love how it intersperses these, like, actual clips.
Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah, exactly. I wonder if Soderbergh and Bennett Miller talked. You know?
I wonder,
like, there's
Soderbergh
sometimes...
seems like a kind of guy who would be like, yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah. Like, you know, there's that, or, you know, or maybe at least, you know, the studio... own that screenplay. Maybe Bennett Miller just read it. But again, Soderbergh
seems... Oh, I know
seems,
he had access to it.
Yeah, so Soderbergh, you know, again, seems like an open guy. And
apparently
he wasn't
even that pissed off. He's like, you know, if I can't do it that way, let someone else do it.
Yeah.
I don't know, I wasn't there, but that's what, like... I followed this production a lot. We actually haven't mentioned Bennett Miller too much today. And I think we should remind our Hoff fans out there that Bennett Miller and Philip Seymour Hoffman are childhood... friends. They went to theater camp together.
Theater camp and...
Along with Dan Futterman.
Yes. Not a part of this...
No. Maybe he did a draft or something.
No, the two big... I mean, it was Steve Zalian, which should ring some bells, but wrote, you know, Gangs of New York, Schindler's List, American Gangsters, just a couple small movies there. And then they had Aaron Sorkin come in.
Oh, Aaron Sorkin, I totally forgot.
And clean it up. But Sorkin said, no, keep, like, Steve's name. Like, he just, you know.
He just zipped the lines. We'll
yes.
Say.
just like you said, I mean, this is a movie. So they ended up changing that scene that was maybe just a phone call in the book. But talk about, like. You know, I mean, Aaron Sorkin, obviously plenty of credits to his name, but I always think of The Social Network and how he made, like, coding and talking about that, like, have entertainment value.
Yeah.
And so that helps for a movie that there's just a lot of explanation and also bringing in to, you know, the world of baseball that, like, inside thinking and explanation of it.
Absolutely.
Like the scouts and this, what these guys are explaining right now.
See, I think to a hardcore baseball fan, this conversation is a little bit more absurd. Because, okay, these are scouts from the Mets. They want to sign him. And the mom ends up asking, like, oh, but he has a scholarship to Stanford. Can he still go?
Yeah.
They definitely would have known that, you know. But it's good for us to know.
Yeah, she has to say that because we have to know what's on the line here for
because
character Billy. This, like, I mean, the last movie we covered, Ides of March, that we said is just, you know, such a, you know, Greek tragedy. Mm-hmm. This to me is on the same scale of just, like, it's just, to me, this is just one of the, like, the more, like, tragic stories.
Yeah, because, like, what he couldn't get in baseball playing, he wants to get in baseball running a team.
Yeah.
And I love that line, like,
yeah,
you know, this is the kids' game, we're all told, like, when we can stop, when we have to stop playing. For some of it's 18, for some of it's 40. They're really, like, pumping him up. And he, on paper, he does have all the tools to succeed.
Do you know where Mount Carmel is?
I believe California. I think he's from California.
Ooh, Plato.
That's totally one thing. I really doubt Paul DePodesta had a thing of Plato in his room. It just, oh, he's a smart guy.
I love this. I love their phone conversations in this film. I love all their conversations, but I love just Billy, like, being up late.
Yeah, he's a workaholic.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with making this team great. And it's... But he's not, like, a bad guy.
It's even... It's beyond work, you know?
Yeah, true. It's, like, a passion.
Yeah. I mean, it's his life. Like, definitely... And then they'll get into this, and we haven't met his family yet, but, I mean, he has a daughter.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
And, but, like... But point being, like, you know, you could definitely see... And you could just... Or just... You could just understand, oh, this guy puts everything into this, and not that he's a bad dad, but that's why his, like, marriage didn't work.
Yeah.
Like, you just get that. I love it, and he just has, what, sunflower seeds, or and he's even the scene at Cleveland, like, he's just picking away at, like, the, like, you're on the same level, you have the very much, you're a grazer.
I'm not a big sunflower seed guy.
No, but I'm just saying, like, the constantly, like,
I am a snack guy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't like the work of sunflower seeds. I also don't like spitting something out.
I love this.
Yeah. Jason Giambi. Went to the Yankees that offseason. Johnny Damon went to the Red Sox that offseason.
This I also want to say again. I mean, I'm sure I'll say it a few more times, but I've mentioned that I'm enjoying the cinematography. But this is a movie where, I mean, cinematography, it's not just about the camera angles, but the lighting in this movie is amazing. Like, that's, I'm not going to get too technical about what they're doing, but I truly love the way this movie is lit, and it just makes the cinematography pop, and I love the colors, and I love, like,
that. Baseball is about colors, right?
Like, yeah.
The green of the grass. The A's have such great colors for, like, in terms of, like, distinction between, like, that hunter green.
Yeah.
And that yellow that just pops.
Taxi cab yellow. No, it's a little more lighter than taxi. I don't know.
I don't know what their yellow is called.
Red, like Kelly my mother's Green. Marinara. Sorry, Bobby De Niro.
I love this right here. Yeah. You know, because, like, that's something like a really nervous person would do.
Yeah. And it just adheres to just their relationship and what, you know, I mean, the character development in this movie is fantastic.
Okay, so there are little cute things it does to, like, high-five the book readers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, little things that you wouldn't, and I'll point them out when they happen.
I just love the way he's holding the baseball.
Like, little things they point out that are huge chapters in the book, that they just give a little nod to. And, like, a lot of them happen in the room, his video room.
I love, like, Billy trying to keep up at some points.
Because Billy Bean is considered the godfather of the stats movement, but ultimately he was a player. He wasn't a Harvard guy himself. He credits a lot his mentor, the GM who gave him a chance, Sandy Alderson, who later became GM of the Mets, but he was GM of the A's when they won the World Series in the early 90s, and it was a very different type of team than this, but Billy basically said to him, hey, it's obviously not working out for me as a player. Can you give me a job as something? And Sandy let him be a scout. And eventually, when Sandy moved on and retired at the time, you know, he later took jobs, Billy ended up taking over for him.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, I mean, Billy Bean clearly is talented. I mean, you almost look at it, like, it's because I know more about football, but you look at, like, everyone loves Tony Romo as an announcer now because of, like, the insight that he's giving. And you just look at his career, and while, like, I mean, he had some great years, it always seemed to be, like, when he had a great year as a quarterback, the defense wasn't doing well, and vice versa, and he got injured often, and you just look at it, and it's, like, clearly he's a smart and passionate and, you know, like, just a guy that just never got that year, And that's what I at least I'm trying to associate with, like, Billy
and
Beane.
And towards the end, you know, not a spoiler, guys, if this is the first time you're watching Moneyball, you're watching with our voices, don't. Just watch it.
Yeah, exactly. Watch the movie. Yeah.
But, you know, in the end, when he says no to the Red Sox job, it's pretty much understood that Billy Beane could have almost any job he wants for more money.
I know. I hate him so much at the end for that.
But he has stayed with the A's till this day.
It's pretty crazy that they, like, have kept him this long.
Well, he wins with the almost lowest payrolls.
Yeah.
And he has, like, a couple bad, you know, he'll have, like, two or three bad seasons, and then they'll be back in the playoffs, like they were last year and the year before, with guys who are like, who the hell is this?
Yeah. Maybe is he...
Also, I believe he has a little bit of an ownership stake now.
Oh, okay.
Like, in lieu of giving him the contract, maybe the Red Sox and the Yankees. Not that the Yankees were in the market, but the Cubs were certainly in the market for him.
Okay.
You know, big market teams that they're like, hey, we can't give you that, but here's, like, a 5% ownership. Mm-hmm. Then that team is still, the biggest thing they're fighting for is to get a new stadium in Oakland.
Yeah. How many stadiums have you been to?
I have not.
Here we go.
Now, as you alluded to, Art Howe is not happy with his performance, but Art Howe was manager of the Mets, too, and Art Howe's an ornery fellow, so I'm not surprised.
I just love it. Going in for the meeting with the scouts.
Also, Hoffman said that he didn't base his performance off Art Howe. He read the book and read the script and thought of how he
would, exactly. Which is fine.
And you know, I can, like, Hoffman's a bigger guy than Art Howe. That has to hurt Art Howe.
Yeah, they even, like, they definitely don't do anything to hide Hoffman's, like, at this time, like, being, like, overweight.
Yeah.
Like, it's, not to get into fashion, but rule number one, if you're a bigger person, you don't wear horizontal stripes.
Certainly not ones that look like that as well.
Yeah, and then the tucked in polo, like, it's just very, like, his gut is very present. Yeah. But I just love, just look, these are just two, at this point, veteran actors, just, like, it's like a fucking ping pong table, just like... You know, just back and forth.
I would just be honored if I was Art Howe, if Philip Seymour Hoffman was going to play me.
Well, do you really think that Art Howe, like, knew? I don't know. No offense, Art Howe, if you're listening. But thank you for listening.
Now, this was actually at the time when the A's would, like, put these seasons and get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And develop these players. Because, look, they had Giambi. They didn't sign him, though. Mm-hmm. It was Jermaine Dye. I think they traded for Jermaine Dye because he was on the Royals. But Isringhausen, they stole from the Mets and made good. Yeah. All these good players they had, and one of the biggest criticisms of the film is they don't touch on the pitching staff, which was amazing. Barry Zito, Mark Mulder. Who was the third guy? Now I'm missing him. I'll figure it out. But they had a great pitching staff that they developed, and people were like, wow, this must be Art Howe who's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Art Howe must be the best manager.
Yeah, they get into that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Like, how does he keep winning with this, you know, not garbage, but he keeps developing these young players.
Mm-hmm. And there's another actor in this scene now that we didn't see before, but he's I think since this room is more filled, they definitely have more, you know, actors in it now. But the guy in the red polo, or red shirt, he's been in other movies. He was in The Fighter with Mark Wahlberg and... Very Irish-looking guy.
And the other pitcher I missed was Tim Hudson, by the way. And so the biggest criticism of this film on baseball fans, old-school baseball fans, is that they're like, oh, they act like they won on these numbers, but it was really that pitching staff. No one said it wasn't the pitching staff here. Do you hear any mention of the pitching staff in this entire film? It's about getting those runs that they lost.
Yeah.
Which they're bringing up here.
Yeah.
And it makes it make so much sense, right? They're like, we don't need to replace Giambi. We need to just equal the amount that we had before.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, it's just a good scene that's simplifying what we need to know.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's, like, more, I mean, there's an equation for it. So right away, I love everything he does. The fact that's just such a specific decision to take the cap off with your mouth and then spit it onto the table. There's so many, especially watching this movie. I mean, this is probably the first time I watched it since we watched it for PS Hoffman.
Now, so they just mentioned Jeremy Giambi, Jason's brother. And
yes.
He's going to be one of the replacements. What's funny is they act like they're acquiring him. In real life, he's already on the team.
Oh,
and he was
okay.
actually seen in the earlier, the famous play, the flip play,
yeah.
the Jeter one. You know, a fluke that the Yankees won that game. I mean, it wasn't a fluke because it was a great play by Jeter, but it was barely the A's would have beaten the Yankees.
Yeah.
He's actually the one who hit the ball in that play, or something along the lines. Like, I know he was involved in that play. But it's still, whatever, it doesn't kill the movie.
Yeah.
Who cares about Jeremy Giambi?
Party boy.
Oh, I think you meant before when he was like.
Yeah, he's like, is that.
When I point at you,
yeah.
you say. I mean, and I get the scout's point of view, too. If you bring in, like, a young buck after you've been doing this thing for 30 years, and he's just, like, telling you how to do your job, you'd be pissed off, too.
Yeah, like, also, like, this mystery, just, like, you feel. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's. I totally.
I think it happens in every industry, you know?
Yeah. Just. That's so good. You guys just keep hearing. This is, I mean, this really is a movie that. I mean, when this came out, it did reinvigorate. I mean, it was what two years before this movie came out was the last time the Yankees won the World Series. But yeah, it just made me kind of have like a bit more passion for baseball. Again,
what year did this movie come out?
2011.
2011. Okay.
So yeah, 10 years since the Yankees have won. What a long, right? This is such a
for the
long
Yankees.
Drought. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like this book changed almost every industry. You know, in terms of just the outlook on things.
Yeah.
Like you know, you're don't
go for. I could see that. Yeah.
Find. The flaw might not be an actual flaw, you know. They brought up
yeah, there's
Chad
always,
Bradford, who was through underhand, but he still was good. And
yeah, there's always I mean, there's a really good message behind it all too, which is the ironic part. I mean, we haven't gotten to it yet, but like, I mean, they say the Island of Misfit Toys,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
But you know, so Chris Pratt, who we you know haven't met yet in the film, he was told by I think I said this back when we recorded the episode, but that he was too heavy to play that character.
That's funny.
So it's just like, it's just funny that in this, then in the Hollywood world.
Well, I think that you hit on a really good point. I think that Hollywood should really take a lot of lessons from Moneyball when it comes to,
yeah.
even with making movies.
Some of the biggest hypocrites in the world.
Wouldn't you say, I know you're not, like, I know you work in film and stuff, but not on the Hollywood level.
No.
Wouldn't you say that there is so much waste on a film
set? Oh, here we go, speaking of. Of so much, yeah. The big, I mean, God,
like,
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to get into, like, political and union talk and stuff like that. But
no,
like,
no, but even that aside, like, in terms of just, like, there are a lot of positions of people who just stand around. And I know you said that.
Yes, it is one of those industries that is the cliche of the line "hurry up and wait," because it's just there's a lot to do in like a little time, and then you have this huge span of time where you just have to sit around. But it's like it's almost not on the level of importance, but like you're waiting in the ER for an emergency to come in. And then it's go time, and that's kind of how working on films is, because everyone except for like when they're filming I mean there's still a lot of people that are working right now. Forget the actors, but you know, between your director, your camera operator, your you know assistant camera, your DP, your you know gaffers paying attention to the lighting, but all of you know those long credits that you see at the end of the film, all those people are standing by. The makeup artist is standing by. The best boy is standing by. And then when they have to change, because they're filming all of Chris Pratt's shots, and then they're redoing it and filming all these shots, and they have to change the lighting because that side of the room isn't lit when that side is. So it's just, it's just one of those, if they could save money, they would. So by having too many people, they don't, like, you know, movies don't want to have a large crew or something like that, because that just means paying that many more people. But there just isn't, there hasn't been a way to perfect it yet. But there, by all means, there still is, like, a lot of wasting. But to get back to the whole...
Yeah, I'm sure there are ways. A lot of people have said that potentially they make movies with this kind of structure and so inaccessible that there, so there are less than them.
Yeah.
If you think about how many podcasts there are, 660,000 podcasts out there, how can anyone actually... Thank you guys for listening today.
Yes.
But how can anyone actually, like, break out,
yeah,
you know? And be something, unless you're something before. And I think something that's something Hollywood fights.
Well, they're creatures of habit, which is definitely what this movie shows, like, creatures of habit for baseball. And that's just, I mean, again, that's something that, like, kind of every industry has. Yeah. But let's just also, right now, look at the, you know, the...
I like the portrait in the background.
Yeah. The young Chris Pratt, really not much.
With a soul patch. As
Scott
Hatterberg.
As Scott Hatterberg, yes.
And this was one of... They're not exaggerating. This was one of the most curious things that was happening. People, like, the baseball press were like, why the hell did the A's just sign the Red Sox backup catcher? Not even talking about his arm, like... You know, they got there in, like, the stroke of midnight to sign this guy.
Yeah.
Even he's surprised, which I love. I think he plays great as Scott Hatterberg. I mean, I even forgot, by the way, that Robin Wright was in this film.
Yeah, plays his wife, or ex-wife. And one of just the best cameos, and just such an awkward person. Director Spike Jonze.
What a California home.
Yes. I want to even say, like, Northern California.
Yeah, you know? Northern California home.
Actually, no, this might be... No, I don't know.
Actually, yeah.
It's The Daughter Flies. No, it doesn't matter. But I'd love to look at this right now. Spike Jonze, director.
And just for those who maybe are not familiar with Spike Jonze, Kyle, like, what is he famous for directing?
Okay, adaptation, you know. Okay, Jesus Christ right now.
Did you Her?
Her... oh God, why am I blanking on the John Cusack?
Being John Malkovich.
Being John Malkovich, thank you. Where the Wild Things Are, yeah. And then just, I mean, famous music video director. This is funny. This is a time, I think...
Jamboni. It's Glee Design. I love the...
Look at
sandals.
Yeah. She, like, she just married such a different guy. She went, it didn't work with that
the
guy.
The jock.
Yeah, it didn't work with the let me go with that guy.
Yeah.
And I don't, I'm not trying to maybe...
Did you notice see their portrait in the background?
And they're both wearing white.
Yeah. It's a really, really good
what
set
a fun,
in this film.
What a fun photo shoot day that probably was. I love, yeah, and just a great cell phone for a 12-year-old. I think Wolf of Wall Street came out two years after this, with Jonah Hill's in, and Spike Jonze has a small role in that movie, too, where I actually got to meet him, because they were filming the town over from, like, right where we grew up.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And he was just a really cool guy. Actually, it was Wes that was there, and was like, I think that's Spike Jonze, because we know that he was in the movie.
No, yeah.
And we were like, why would Spike Jonze be here? And he's like, yeah, I'm in a small, like, role in this. And he's just...
That's cool.
Yeah, and here we get to meet his daughter.
Yeah, I love the father-daughter dynamic here.
Yeah.
Just back to Pratt and Hatterberg for a while. I mean, for a little bit. I really, really enjoy that entire arc in the film. It's one of the better ones of, like, the players they focus on. And it's a big one in the book, so I think they do a really... really good job of that. And it's one of these breakout Chris Pratt roles that once he got on Parks and Rec and stuff and then started, like, moving up here and there, you would, like, look, like, okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, when they were filming this, there was probably only, like, two seasons of of Parks and Rec at that point. I think Parks and Rec ended in 2014, 15.
So maybe.
So, and there was like seven seasons of that. Yeah, no, so it would be
but
like...
this is when he was doing things like that. This is obviously before Guardians, but...
Yes.
You have like Zero Dark Thirty as well. Like, yeah. We're not Bin Laden.
Yeah, exactly. I love their relationship.
I do, but... And I always say that, and then I think, oh, I think I'd make a good divorced father. And then I really think about that, and I'm like, that's really dark.
Like a really good divorced father.
Because their relationship is built on his yearning to be with her, you know?
Yeah.
And he's known, like, the balance of time that he spends on the baseball. His whole life is baseball and her.
Yeah.
And that's it. We don't see him dating other people in the film. Or I'm sure he's since... I think Billy Bean's since remarried and stuff like that. But for the sake of the character, Billy Bean.
A song that becomes...
Yeah.
Plays
I love that
later on.
Scene later. And it's funny because if I forget to mention it, people... Oh, classic old Mets uniform.
Would you get that?
Racing shirt. I would. I definitely would get that jersey. Oh, that song. Obviously, that's... I forgot who actually wrote the song, but it's like a famous song.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the most Googled questions to this film is, did Billy Bean's daughter really write that song? I'm like, come on, guys.
Yes, she did, to answer your question.
See, I don't think broadcasters would ever say that. Like, he turned down a scholarship to go to Stanford.
No, but they're playing the chorus right now.
Yes. Oh, what a nice, sexy Mets uniform. The only thing I don't like, and this was...
So what years was he on the Mets? Do you know?
Like, late 80s. Sorry. Mid-80s.
So he wasn't on the 86 team?
No, they had traded him, like, right before.
Oh, God.
Also, he wasn't consistently on the team. He was, like...
I like that we got to see Strawberry Jersey.
Tidewater Tides. Yeah. The Mets minor league affiliate at the time in Norfolk. I love that hat.
Yeah, that's,
Yeah, Toledo Mud Hen. So this is after he was traded. So he's, like, bouncing around, and he's on the Twins.
87. Good year.
Yeah, no,
They got a good... It's a good look, Brad Pitt, you know, younger
look-alike.
Yeah,
you believe it. But, they always talked about him and Strawberry were drafted, like, around the same time together, going to come up together, and then Lenny Dykstra, who's a D-bag in real life, let's be honest. But Lenny Dykstra was like a nobody who beat out Billy Bean for that position on the World Series team by just like on like guile and working hard.
Yeah.
And eventually when he went to the Phillies, he did steroids. Yeah. So
now we see Bean.
Yeah.
We see Bean
playing for the A's.
For the A's, yeah.
Oh, okay, this is one of those nods I told you about in the book.
Yeah.
The book devotes a lot of time to Kevin Youkilis, who ends up... I don't even think at the time... I guess, at the time he was on the Red Sox, but at the time of the book, he wasn't quite, like, an everyday player on the Red Sox, and he had some great seasons with the Red Sox.
Oh, yeah, he was on at least one of the...
Yeah, I think one of the World Series.
One of the World Series teams. I remember him... I remember watching. He definitely had played a few games where, you know, Red Sox versus Yankees, and had some great games, and I fucking hated him.
Well, the only two organizations that saw anything in him were the Red Sox and the A's. And DePodesta in the book, and Brandt here, loves him, and he calls him the Greek god of walks, because the guy could, like, walk like nobody's business. See, and there's things deleted from the book that are fine.
Yeah. I wish I was, I worked in sports, because then they just get to wear such comfy-looking clothes. Like, if I just...
Just work in, like, the Silicon Valley and code. They seem like they
work. I guess so, yeah. But it's, like, sports and, like, or you can dress like that if you're, like, in the mob or something.
Yeah, the mob, like, yeah.
So
in the book, there's this, and this is where, I believe this guy's name is Grady, he gets fired.
I love, like, this is... Like, this conversation really, I mean, it's just the boiling point of, like you said, like, the older, the veteran,
old
and just
school,
old school getting so frustrated by, you know, the, like, what he, you know, like, thinks of, like, you know, Jonah Hill's, like, the little shit, you know, like, the whole, like, and Billy Bean thinking that, you know, he can, yeah, exactly, had changing 150 years.
Yeah. Now, I really doubt he said that.
I mean, you never know. I mean, people, when they're mad, they people go for the jugular, and that's definitely, I love it. Okay, my turn. Oh, so perfect.
I believe in real life, this guy ended up working for Billy Bean again, like, 5 or 6 years later.
They patched things up. Yeah, makes sense. I mean, you just, you know, eat crow, and you realize, oh, there were changes to be made.
And I think Billy, too, probably, like...
Yeah.
We can't 100% shoo off old-school scouting.
No, there's... Yeah, that's the whole thing. Like, I mean,
it's like
you know...
It's like
we,
a nice marriage of both.
Yes. You can't live in a world of extremes. That's just, you know... That, again, there's... I don't know. This is a great movie that just... Everything applies to, like, so many... So much shit in the world. And this is, you know... Two people that, you know, you could take the same story that's happening, this the same dialogue that's happening between these two guys.
It's a little physical.
Yeah. And make it about, yeah.
Did you notice, yeah.
PSH in the background, kind of.
And that's what makes Philip Seymour Hoffman so good. He's not like...
Well, and they made him wear a red shirt on purpose there to pop in the background, you know?
He's just... Yeah, there's so many moments here where he's not talking. And I like how he promotes this Kabuta guy. Like, you never play baseball? Good, you're the new head scout.
I love this monitor. I'm going to call it Video Village because that's what they call it in the production world. When you're
now, I was going to mention. So in the book, there's one of the main people, like Chad Bradford and Scott Hatterberg.
Yeah,
is this catcher named Jeremy Brown? Who Jeremy Brown is like super overweight, but the A's take him anyway.
Like the catcher from Angels in the Outfield.
Yeah, he's like that size. Yep. The A's take him anyway because he like. Walks a lot, and he can, you know, get on base, and they think they can get something out of him. And he's deleted from the film, and I know the reason why, because he's one of the people that they were kind of wrong about that, like, never made it.
Yeah, so for... Exactly.
You know, you can't be like, we're wrong, too.
Oh, we get, the chorus of they do a good job of, you know, getting to use announcers for exposition.
Yeah. We didn't bring up David Justice, former Yankee, former Brave, who essentially the Yankees paying half of his contract not to be on the team.
Which plays into a great line of dialogue later. Yeah.
And they think they could get something out of him. Oh, so cool. Yeah.
I would love... just like...
And we get the old A's spring training hat. God,
I love baseball movies. I mean, I love sport movies, but this is just such a great baseball movie. Quite possibly the best baseball movie.
It's one of the best sports films.
This is
my favorite baseball movie because this is one of my favorite films of all time. But I like baseball movies. Bull Durham, Major League.
You're not a big Field of Dreams person.
No, I mean, I don't hate Field of Dreams.
You also just don't feel it's a lot about baseball, right?
It's really not a baseball film, you know.
This is
a baseball film.
As far, yeah, oh, yeah.
Field
exactly.
of Dreams is like, let's go find a poet for half the movie, you know.
But it's James Earl Jones.
I know, and that's fine. It's a good movie.
But that's what Field of Dreams...
They don't play, like, games in Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams is about... The line later that Billy says, just like, oh, you know, like, it's the most romantic sport. Take that line and then make a movie about it. It's Field of Dreams. And just like, this is the first, I think it was sport movie, but definitely baseball movie that was nominated for Best Picture since Field of Dreams.
Oh, wow.
It was like a 22-year gap.
Now, I was going to say before that I really like that A's spring training hat.
Yeah.
It's an elephant with... sunglasses in a sun.
Oh, yeah, why not? Yeah.
Exactly. Pretty random. That's athletic.
Yeah.
Now, the A's originally were in Philadelphia as the Philadelphia Athletics, your favorite city.
Yes.
Then they moved to Kansas City. Then they moved to Oakland. But they have the elephant as their logo.
I love that part. I'm just kidding. Yeah. This doesn't work. Look at Jonah Hill's face.
I would feel the same way.
Yeah. But also at the same time, like, since this is now technically his second job ever, like, and you have a degree, like, While you do want it to work, and no one like wants to get fired necessarily.
This is kind of bullshit. They only have David Justice up there.
Yeah.
They would put some other player. Yeah. You know, just to... First of all, they have Miguel Tejada, who becomes an MVP at some point.
Welcome to Oakland.
Yeah, where he has to pay for the soda. But they have Miguel Tejada, they have Barry Zito, they do have other stars on the team.
Like, yeah.
That's for the narrative of the film. But you were saying that it's his second year. Or his second organization.
Yeah, so it just like, I mean, and he went to, again, was it Yale or, you know, an Ivy League school. Like, he's fine. Like, if he got fired, he's fine. But this guy does a good job as a...
Yeah, he does. Oh, I was going to say the elephant is like the alternate logo or the side patch logo of the A's because in Philadelphia, they had a really expensive team 1 year and they said that it was, oh, this is your white elephant. You're not going to be able to do anything with it. And then that carried on. Though they replaced it with the mule for a couple years in the 70s, which I think is weird.
I know there's definitely some days that were just... messaging back and forth, and we send obscure. I mean, you by far know more, but like, I'll see like a random team, and you know of it. But I'm like, oh, I love that design, like, or that like mascot or that logo for like, you know, a AAA ball club or like,
yeah,
or hockey teams that don't exist anymore when they were in another city, and just like fun names or fun logos. And but that's a pretty good one for talking, obviously. Podcast, it's like you and then like to me like then like Bill Burr, that just he knows so much about sports, like listening to his, you know, like podcast, he just knows so much of like that whole, like you said, like, oh, they're in Philadelphia then Kansas City, like of that stuff. It's just amazing to me how people, you know,
it's also very useless.
It doesn't, but no, but it's okay, useless, but that's how much you love the game. Like, I always say, like, I have such, like, when it comes to sports, out of any fan of anything, you, I have the most respect for, because it's just like, you're like, yeah, Mets, like, that's my team, and that, like, and while you enjoy watching all other sports, like, by, like, not that baseball is the only sport that you have,
that's
like,
my number one.
That's your number one, but I mean, like, you don't, besides like New York teams, you don't necessarily have an allegiance to hockey or football.
I would say basketball.
Yeah.
With the Knicks.
Yeah.
I you know, I'm a big Knicks fan.
But still, like, they don't
I kinda like to ignore the Knicks because they hurt a lot. I would say of all teams that hurt the second most, the Knicks would be the second most. Like that I follow the Knicks daily. I don't talk about it because they've been really bad.
This is a trailer shot right here.
Yeah, certainly the Knicks are number two. But no, but you're right. I'm like, oh, let me latch onto this team and then become. The Mets are number one.
Yeah.
Like, my entire outlook on life and my entire life will change if and when they win the World Series.
Will there be anything that you'll do differently?
Absolutely.
What would you do?
Absolutely. I would take more chances in my life.
If once they win,
yeah, I need to survive now so I can see them win.
Oh, in that sense, okay.
Once I see them win,
like you'll go like diving with sharks or something.
I mean, maybe. Certainly, okay. It's almost like because I've never seen the Mets win the World Series.
Yeah,
I don't believe that anything good will happen in my life. I think that
because nothing good has happened in your life.
I think everything that good has happened in my life has been dumb luck. It hasn't been anything that I deserved. Because I've never seen a team of mine, get a championship that they deserved, and if I see that happen, yeah, I think it might change my outlook in life.
Okay,
but I don't think it'll ever happen.
I love.
Yeah, we get a little more our how moments.
And yeah,
he's just completely counter Billy. He really becomes Billy's foil.
Yes. Yeah. That's like, there's no like antagonist in the film. It's like almost like Billy is his worst enemy, like his own worst enemy in a way at some points. And then, here we go.
Great shot.
Yeah. Again, they have him sitting a certain way. Like, he's just a physical presence, you know. He's not playing the team that he's.
Because that. Art Howe's not being that much of an asshole. Because up until this point, that was pretty much how things went in every sport. The GM put the team together,
yeah.
and the manager or coach
tried to make it work to the...
Did with yeah. whatever yeah. he wanted with those tools.
Yeah.
100% in every sport. And I think almost every sport has changed in that respect, where there are plenty of teams that are GM teams now.
Yeah.
That I would even argue that your Giants are closer to a GM team than they've ever been in terms of...
Yeah.
Like with Coughlin and Jerry Reese, that was definitely the old model, you know? I give you the Johnnies and Joes.
yeah.
You run it. But a lot more NFL teams now are doing it. I'm going to put the team together. Let me get a coach who's going to just listen to me. I feel like Dallas has been that way with Jason Garrett.
Oh, yeah. That ginger. Yeah. I love to... Yeah.
But baseball is very...
I love what it was. Every time...
yeah.
Just the... the Popeye kind of walk away.
Yeah. And then you see the guy putting the money in.
Yeah. There's just so much...
These shots are kind of funny.
Yeah, it's like one of those things, like, they love having that, like, shipping yard kind of in the background of, like, driving shots, and while, I mean, I know it's the Bay Area, but it's like one of those things, like, we always, in, like, power lines. I don't know, I guess it's just to, you know, desolate and just...
I think, yeah, it shows, like, how he watches the games, yeah. you know. I think it shows
goes
that...
Goes to a quiet, yeah.
Oakland is a working-class town. They're really trying to say this is a small market. But in actuality, if they were showing, like, a set... Oh, wait, I don't want to forget this. This is where they... The book is a lot about, like I said, Bill James, mm-hmm. the statistician.
Yeah.
And this is, like, the little part they do here that, like, talks about the Bill James stuff.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, though, they're really trying to make it seem like Oakland is a small market town. And it is. I mean, it's a, team. Yeah. It's a small market team.
This is the moment where I think also Aaron Sorkin, like, came in and was like, yeah. okay, let me make this work for you. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you don't see any establishing shots of San Francisco, right? You see the Bay Bridge briefly, but you don't see, like, the Golden Gate Bridge
no,
or something
yeah.
like that. Because, again, it is Oakland, but...
Yeah, even... What are you going to show of Oakland? Mr. Cooper's house?
Cooper! No, I mean, but the thing is, like, they're not making it seem like it's a big city or a big place. I think a lot of people who don't know where Oakland is and watch this movie, they're not going to think that it's literally across the river from San Francisco.
Yeah.
But...
I live in the Oakland of...
Kind of, right? Because I was actually just going to say that. The Devils in hockey are very much like the A's in baseball.
Yeah.
In terms of, the Devils are very much a small market team.
Yes.
In a big market.
Yes.
Which is even worse.
Yes.
Some people would say the Mets... act like a small market team. They're not, you know, they're legitimately in the city. But I'd say the Devils and the Islanders in hockey.
Yeah, well, the Mets came in and filled a void
yeah,
that was no, left behind.
It's more of a joke because the owners are cheap.
Yeah. But they filled a void of the Dodgers and the Giants leaving and, you know, I mean, and New York just being such a large place.
Yeah.
But the Devils came in and you already had Rangers being one of the original, like,
yeah.
teams.
And then the Islanders had already won four cups.
The Islanders, and then let's face it, then you got pretty much South Jersey then going with the Flyers.
And they were never going to, like, root for the North Jersey team, and people
yeah.
aren't going to...
It's pretty crazy that they came to be, like, you know, a New Jersey team. But I'm all for it, because I love the Devils.
It's a weird thing, right? Like, New Jersey people can vote for a team, can root for a team that's New York on the name.
Yeah.
But New York people have a hard time rooting for a team that's has New Jersey.
It's because they're snobs.
No, but it's a specific place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah,
and
exactly.
I think Oakland is very similar. I bet you people in San Francisco have a hard time rooting for the Oakland team.
Yes.
And that people in Oakland probably don't care about rooting for the San Francisco team.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's just got... I mean, if there was a New Jersey baseball team, if there was a New Jersey football team, yeah, then there you would lose fans from the Jets, the Giants, or the Yankees, the Mets.
Yeah.
But this is all very, you know... And it's just interesting where teams end up, and I mean, so you have two New York teams playing in the same stadium in New Jersey, you know, and then you have.
Don't get me started on that. That pisses me off.
Then you see, and you also see where like majority of the Jets fans are, which are like out on like Long Island, and
because they used to play in Shea Stadium.
Yeah, but it's just crazy that like they didn't end up. out on like Long Island, or you see what happened with the Islanders, and are the Islanders heading back to Long Island?
Yeah, because that's, you know, that's where the fans come from, and that's
exactly. But you know, they try. It's just sometimes, you know, I mean, at the same time that I will make the argument, like I said earlier, like, oh, if they could save money, or if they did, they would. But sometimes decisions are made, and it is like, why did you do that? Like, I guess there, I guess in the end, like you said, once the Mets will win, maybe you'll take more risks. I guess they were in a comfortable place financially to take risks and see if they moved to Brooklyn, they would then also gain like a new younger market.
They were
besides
definitely
being
trying
in Long Island.
It, yeah.
They
were definitely.
They knew that a new stadium was being built
also,
there.
Also, it
horrible to watch?
It's terrible because it was only built for basketball.
Yeah.
They got their, how can I put it? They got their new arena by having to move out of their old arena and then being like, we want to move back, because they would have just built one right next to that arena. It was so much red tape and politics that they kind of felt forced to do something.
Oh, such a sad sign. We're still proud of you.
Like, surrounded by nobody.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love these.
I was so into baseball at the time. So into baseball that I remember these exact
like
moments.
Again, like 2002 season?
Yeah, I was really into baseball because the Mets had just made the World Series in 2000, so they were still competing there in disappointing years. But, you know, I watched baseball my whole life, even as a kid, but I really got into it like 96, like with the first Yankees one. Not that I was rooting for the Yankees, but, you know, I started really following the Mets.
And here we go with the announcers. Like you said earlier, like, you know, Art Howe isn't the problem. Billy Bean is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, which, hey, you know what? Honestly, I mean, I know the Oakland, you know, the A's don't go on to win the World Series or anything like that, but I very much hope that this is what's going to happen with everyone saying what they are saying about, like, Gettleman as the,
oh, the Giants. Yeah, like, what is he thinking?
What is he thinking? Well, like you said, before we started recording, he asked me if I was, like, watching any, like, his videos, and he's had to go out and and that's what you get for it being also a New York market.
Yeah.
But, like, him going out and explaining himself, it's just like, you know what, in the end of the day, like, he doesn't have to explain himself. That's who, I don't know.
Well, the
just
wins and losses will explain.
Yeah, like,
I love this. Oh, my God. I think this was in the trailer, too, where he's just, like, talking to himself, like, what the hell am I doing?
Yeah.
Shit. I don't think this guy still owns the A's, and it looks like at the time he's like a housing developer, because you see like the model in the background.
Yeah. Yeah, probably a guy that just, you know, made money elsewhere and decided to buy a baseball team.
Yeah, but he's not one of the richer owners. You have to be really, really, really rich to own a team.
Yeah.
This guy has more money than any of us will ever have, but it's still not enough for baseball.
No.
Especially, they're a team that doesn't make a lot of money.
No, like it's a small market. I mean, you know, I mean, you're making your money from.
They also don't own their stadium.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they might own the stadium, but it's not a new stadium. That's not, like we were discussing because of your Foodie Films podcast and just my love for baseball. All the new restaurants and stuff that the Mets have put into
City Field is just it's a food mecca.
And look, that also makes the team a lot of money. You know,
yeah, well,
you're not gonna be able to do
you're
that.
You're getting
in
it
Oakland
from concessions and merchandising.
People aren't going to go
merchandising. Oh, isn't it precious? Oh.
We've all been there, I think.
Yeah. I love this. I love their relationship. I think she went on to be in, what's that, Liev Schreiber?
Oh, yeah.
Showtime?
Ray Donovan.
Ray Donovan, yeah. Liev Schreiber, one of the greater voice.
What a voice.
Voices, voice actors, documentarian, narrator.
I'm sorry, I want to get her name.
Something Irish, I think, right? Or am I thinking of her character on radio?
What would her name
be? Isn't it Abigail something, maybe? I don't know. I'm totally wrong.
I'm on Wikipedia, and I'm not
I feel like it's going to be Emily, Abigail.
Let me go to IMDb, it's easier. And this is the pressure that I think a lot of people don't think about when you, like, have a high-profile sports job or an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we're calling our radio stations and saying, like, screw this guy. Yeah. I hate him. Trade him. It's yeah, that means getting, you know, maybe a father not seeing a kid. Someone being uprooted from a school.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah. There was something, I thought there was something recently where it was just like, yeah, like I was watching or reading an article and I was like, yeah, like my kids just started school here. Like we just,
yeah, you know, we
just planted our roots and, you know.
What a shitty feeling. But you know what? They get paid a lot of money, so.
I know. Well, yeah, exactly. It's part of, I mean, I guess it's on the same level as like a military brat, you know.
Fair.
Except you're living much more comfortable.
Karis Dorsey is her name.
I love it. That was... So here we go again with our... The way he looks. His, like, eyebrows really pop in this movie.
At the time, I was trying to explain, it was unheard of a general manager coming to the manager and telling him how to play a lineup. That's why Argo is so resistant. That's why Hoffman plays it so well.
Let me ask you, because, you know, this is, like, in so many movies, and since this is a movie that clearly, you know, adapted, you know, like... You know, it's adapted from a book, and like you said, it took its liberties and it made it into a more, you know, coherent cinematic story. So many movies have a problem with just like, oh, why don't these guys just communicate better? Do you think in real life Billy Bean, like, was like, Art, come in here, and they just literally did the whole, like the way Peter is, like, breaking it down on a board? Do you think they don't have that conversation in the movie? Like, listen,
I think even in the book they try to explain it, but like these guys just don't want to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just, but that's just something that doesn't happen in the movie that like I think could have. Like that is like something that
maybe... it's just also the movie is oversimplifying it even for us.
Yeah.
Even the book is like, which is a complicated book, is oversimplifying it.
Yeah.
Like if you're stuck in your own ways, you don't want to hear it. You don't care about some mathematical mumbo jumbo. As far as Art Howe's concerned, he's gotten his team to the playoffs.
Well, that's the whole thing he said, like, that when he wants to talk his contract early in the film, he's like, yeah, we went, you know, I forget what stage did they make to the playoffs in 2001? Where were they? Were they divisional?
I think they just, you know, usually don't get out of the divisional round. Yeah. I can't remember. But
at this point, what was it like so with, good. What was the...
Sorry, I just love, like, the...
Them passing in the hallways. Yeah. Oh, Billy, he moves. Billy doesn't move.
Yeah.
So good. Where... What were the were the playoffs different at this point as far
a
as
a little bit
wild
there was
card
only one
and,
wild card yeah. back then. Now they're two and they play like a one game thing. Yeah. This would piss me off too, and when they're losing and Billy hears like the music like that.
This is like a great scene that I feel like has happened in other sports movies as well, you know, like
oh, absolutely.
The you know, it's...
There are little things in the background that I'm really enjoying seeing, like what time the players have to get to the game. There's
mm-hmm.
a little thing there.
There's
a uniform code on the side, like what hat to wear with what uniform.
It's just, like you said, it's like a working man's city. It's like a working man's, like, ball club.
Yeah.
Like, you just look at, like, nothing flashy.
No.
Yeah, they just really, they paint the picture well here. It's such a great, like, this is a movie, and this is, like, what I would have people watch, you know, like, when parents, as far as, like, when it comes to kids on teams and being like, oh, you're not being fair, you know, everyone, you know, we live in this world where every kid's getting trophies now. It's like, no, like, losing isn't fun. Winning is fun.
Yeah, there's certainly a balance that needs to be struck. Like,
yeah.
You should, like, be... Like throwing kids on the ground or something like that.
No, but if a kid isn't good, you know what? Like, try to help them to get them better. But, like, you know, there's a reason we use the word benching in, like, you know, is in our vernacular.
Like, see, I don't believe, like, little kids should be benched to the point of, like, this kid is not playing.
No, but, like, that's also why, like, I was stuck in the outfield. Like, because I wasn't, you know.
I think there are ways to, like, help with that, but certainly once you get to a more competitive level.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's done. That way of thinking is done. You go to locker rooms today,
yeah,
and they're the kids that grew up getting all the trophies, so you have to manage them differently. I know you don't like to hear that, but that's 100% the case. Yeah. There's no coach or manager right
weakening
now.
Weakening of our society.
Who's getting in a player's face like they used to. The Army doesn't even do that
except
anymore.
Except for in the South of football.
Fair. But the Army doesn't even do that anymore. Like, you watch Full Metal Jacket, you think they do any of that today?
No. Well, I mean, I have no...
I mean, from what I've heard from people who have been in the military and what they've told me...
Well, like, especially if, I mean, you know, both... Yeah, you just can't if both, you know, sexes are in, you know...
Which you're against.
For no, I'm against.
Starting controversy.
Yeah.
No, we live in a different world at a different time. Simple as that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love just taking the frustration out.
I love these old A's photos, too. And,
like, well, it's like... It makes me think of... Like in the new in MetLife, I hate the stadium, but you know, since it's being shared by the Jets and Giants, there isn't a lot of decorations
which
that
is
are
the worst part of it.
I know that are permanent, but there's two. They're on like opposite sides of the stadium, and they each have like a little mural area, and the Giants have a mural, and it has like the. Like it's designated areas that they can like paint and do a mural. The Giants have a very nice one, the four statues, you know, just different, you know, players, you know, yada yada.
Yeah.
And the Jets side where they can have a mural just says Jets. And it's just like, really, guys? Like you did win one. Like they do have some iconic players,
yeah,
that have played for the team. But it just that just makes me think, you know, this situation where they just, I mean, while they have been having success, they're just living in a, you know, another time. This is a movie of.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
I love the picture of him and his daughter.
And the mug's his dad.
Yeah.
Dave Dombrowski, Red Sox GM now. Tigers GM at the time. So instead of, just to clarify with the film, instead of Art Howe, Philip Seymour Hoffman, playing the players he wants, he's going to say, okay, you're not going to do that. He doesn't want to fire him in the middle of the season. He's going to trade the players that he's playing ahead of the players that Billy wants him to play.
I love even at this point, Peter's just like... He's more afraid for Billy's job than his job at this point.
Because Peña, he became like an all-star, but he never blossomed into the player they thought he was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But,
quite possibly, which will happen with OBJ. We never know.
Well, I mean, OBJ
has already had a better career than Peña. Yeah, okay.
But he... Yeah, it was like, why are you trading this guy who could become a Hall of Famer, essentially?
Yeah.
And he never became that.
Yeah.
He was a good player, but it was literally so you can play this other guy. Which is risky as hell.
Oh, yeah. Do you think, like, even... Like, I don't know what it would be used for, but they have, like, the lottery, like, bingo wheel in the background.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that that's just the random selection? Like, I don't know. There's
don't
just
know.
A lot to
that's
this. Like, it's there. Again,
yeah.
Like, you have to... Like I said, like PSH was wearing that red polo before, like everything. That's the whole thing with movies.
Yeah,
like even just
this one.
Even just the fact that there is a red and blue marker there. Like it's not a political film, but you can start thinking like red and blue. Like those are just two very different. You got cool and warm. Like it's just divisive.
Yeah.
And I love that. I don't know. This
and
is,
you
this...
know how I know they're purposely placed there. The writing is green on the whiteboard. You know,
I didn't even.
And it's red and blue, so you're
absolutely
right.
So yeah, it's not even like there's a green and yellow. Green and yellow would make sense, like because of
the
colors. The
yellow
but
on the whiteboard.
That might
is
be
never good.
That might be blue. I don't know. The lighting in the scene might just be a bit
fair.
More,
it could.
I don't
be.
Know.
Could
I don't
be.
Know.
It could.
But
be.
Point being,
now we're nitpicking.
Yeah. No, but it's just. But that's the great. This is one of those films that you get to talk about that kind of stuff because it's interesting because it's not like Bennett Miller's a veteran filmmaker. This
no.
is his.
But Bennett Miller, as we learned in Capote, is the guy who will make only the films he wants to make.
Yes, he's
and
very.
And he'll take
years. Is methodical a word?
Yeah.
Okay.
he it's like years to make the project he wants to make, and I know he was kind of thrown this one, but he was obviously very excited to do it.
And that's why I was ultimately very disappointed with Foxcatcher.
Was Foxcatcher ever rumored to maybe have Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Because
he's got that wrestling background.
Yeah,
maybe he's not like athletic enough. Or...
No, that's not. I mean, they end up going. I mean, he definitely wasn't going to play the Channing Tatum role.
No.
As far as like,
oh, no.
As far as the Mark, he could have been Mark Ruffalo's character, but I mean, either way, I mean, Mark Ruffalo is such a terrific actor that I mean.
What about Carell?
As DuPont, yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's the whole thing. Like, I mean, I love Steve Carell. What did I just watch the other day? What was his? Oh, I watched Vice, and that was fine. And it's just funny, like that he's working with Adam McKay. Like, you know, which obviously worked on
Big Short
Anchorman
too.
And Big Short, but like in a serious movie, it's just sometimes it's tough with Steve Carell, especially when like it's fine when he's playing, like if it's a serious movie.
Well, people have said he's too likable.
Well, that, but it's just, but if he's in a serious movie and he's playing like a character in that movie as like DuPont with like a very like specific look in the way he's talking, there's just certain lines that I'm just like, oh, that's so like Michael Scott, like as a, like he's already done like a weird character like that on The Office, and it's just one of those.
Okay, good, yeah. Good moment here.
Yeah,
with Art Howe. The way he tells him, I don't know if he told him that like that.
Yeah, like this, but yeah.
Yeah, like you can't play him. Because I traded him.
But yeah, it just works so well for us as the viewers. Yeah. Just this tension.
You know what I found weird when I was rewatching this? One of these, this is like a picture of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah. That's like the World Series, 1974. Yeah. Look at his face. Look at our big guy's face. Trade Pena. He's just, at this point, he's just like, oh my god. Like, you know.
Now, I was going to bring this up. It reminds me of something like my father would do, or something like. Like how he makes Peter tell the other guy tell Penny he got traded.
Yeah. Trial by fire.
Yeah. And then the way he tells Jeremy Giambi is so just like.
Yep, hands him a piece of paper, says it very. Not monotone, but just dry. And
earlier in the movie, he says the reason.
I wish you the best, yeah.
Yeah, the reason why he doesn't, like, go on the, like, hang out with the team is because he doesn't want him to get too close to them.
Yeah.
So that he has to trade them. And that makes a lot of sense. That was, like, my father's business theory, too. I don't know if today people operate like that so much anymore. I feel like everyone wants to be everyone's buddy. God, you're old school. You've made it very clear that you're an old school guy.
Yeah, but not, like, in, like, equality, just in emotions.
No, I know, and you're not like, oh, you know. No, I'm saying civil rights wise. I'm talking about like people, you know. But like now, I feel like it's more
together
like,
and equal.
Like I'm your boss, but I'm your buddy. And before it was like, you know, the boss.
Yeah, I'm not saying I would be, but it's, not like that. But also, I don't want to really be anyone's. I'm a.
Well, you've said this before. Like you have enough friends already. You know, if you get new friends, fine. But you're not actively seeking them.
No, like who is when you're like I don't know in your 30s? Like your 20s is the last decade that like you're actively. That you're great. No, but then you're like actively like still out, and you're like, oh, let's like meet like new people. Like you know, it's just like I'll talk with people. I love having conversations with new people, and if a friendship comes from it, but like I don't know, it's not you know necessary. Unless all my friends die,
you heard it here first.
Yeah,
if you want to be Kyle's friend,
you gotta kill. Yeah, it's the Santa Claus. Yeah.
I mean, that's also. He said it. He did it too to shake up the team and be like, be serious, guys.
I love this part of the movie. Like, coaching the players on their way now that they're finally getting to kind of have, you know, the players that they want to play.
Yeah. And this is something that's, like, commonplace right now.
The GM, like, talking like this? Like, game?
You're GM saying? Game planning, or the assistants game planning with the players.
Yeah.
Now, to different degrees in different clubhouses, of course.
Yeah.
Guys have so much information at their fingertips. Sometimes people have said it's too much information that they'll back off and be like, just do your thing.
Yeah.
You know, just focus on this. Part of the challenge of, I guess, the decade after this film was, wow, we have all this stuff. How do we get it through to the players? And a lot of people have theorized maybe let us filter the information and to only tell them one or two things, not give them the whole stat sheet.
Yeah.
Some players like that. Some players don't respond.
Yeah, need to know bases.
Yeah.
Almost in a way, you know? But I love, this is the great part that he's just like trying to make, you know, David Justice and his hubris understand like where the part he's going to play in this team. While he has that big banner outside and it's name recognition that comes with him, he just, he, you know, oh, this is, and this is the, yeah, it's one of my favorite scenes. Oh, God, I'm so happy we're not playing the Browns this year.
So David Justice, I mean, you have to understand, like, he was an all-star. He was a great player. Maybe not Hall of Fame level, but maybe the level, like, right under.
Yeah.
He's married to Halle Berry at one point. Like, this is a guy who was a celebrity. Yeah. And this is what he's doing now at 37. And the end of the career, he's still getting paid good money, half of it from the Yankees. But, you know, they're losing a lot, and
he says it early, adapt or die.
Yep.
That's what, I mean, and saying that I'm, you know, like, I'm old school in a certain ways, like, that is definitely a big part of that, you know, everyone has to realize, including myself, more and more, like, adapt or die. But at the same time, then you have people that are just trying to change everything at once. And that's just not the way, even if it's all for the better, sometimes that's not going to work just because you can't, you know, like, you're going to break the scale if you toss all the weight, you know,
yeah,
to one side. And that's, I mean, this is just a movie that really, while it's about baseball, makes you think about that kind of stuff more. Just talking about, like, signs in the background, just even had, like, dehydrate. Like,
yeah.
It's, that was just fun little, it's a very... you know, factoidal movie.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I was actually a fan of The Big Short. I didn't think it was as good as this, but I enjoyed that aspect of it. But I totally get how this one is so much more relatable. But I think we talked about this on our...
Again, because this is, I mean, let's see. Banking versus baseball.
But of the three Michael Lewis adaptations,
yeah,
I think The Blind Side is the most like Hollywood.
This is somewhere it's a fucking Hallmark movie.
This is somewhere in the middle, and The Big Short is all the way the other way.
Yeah, which is interesting, because that has the most, like, Hollywood cast, in a way, you know?
Mm, that's true.
And has those, like, you know, Adam McKay cutting to Margot Robbie explaining something in a bubble bath. Which, thank you, Adam McKay. But, yeah.
You Margot Robbie fan?
No, not at all. Ugh. Ugh.
It's like along the. I have to say this.
It doesn't make sense at all that she's playing Barbie versus Amy Schumer. It doesn't make sense at all.
She reminds me kind of a Brad Pitt, where I'm sure she got some early breaks because of she's a pretty lady.
Yeah, but now she's getting to have fun and getting to work on her craft.
Yeah, and she's becoming really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah, her and...
Not that she wasn't, but, like, now she's, like...
Was it just called... Good. Was it called Tanya? What was...
Tanya.
I, Tanya, yeah, yeah.
She's also in the Mary, Queen of Scots movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, she's not like, I'm pretty, let me do... You know,
no,
like,
even her... I mean, her in Wolf of Wall Street, while she is totally, like, you know, being used in the movie as, like, you know...
A pretty lady, put it that way. But, no, she's good.
Yeah. There we go. Here we go. Moving on up past them Rangers.
The Anaheim Angels and the Seattle Mariners.
I love his reaction.
These shots are really cool.
Yeah. Again, just really well lit and the specific very... This, honestly, this now does... This is very theatrical.
Yeah.
This is, you know, he is...
The slow motion bat.
Yeah. 7 in a row. The Clash.
At Oakland Coliseum. How great is that? Just, it's also showing, like, almost punk rock being counter. What he's doing is a little bit counter.
Yeah, exactly. It's, God damn, this movie's perfect. It really is a perfect movie. I don't think that there's any flaw with this movie. I'll say that much. doesn't have to be someone, you know, like you said, it's, you know, one of your favorite movies, like, but it's just a movie that I would 100% have a student of film watch this movie for. It's you know, there are movies that I watched when in film school that you watched for, you know, for writing. There are movies you watched for cinematography. There are movies you watched for editing. This, I mean, I think it just goes to accreditation. I mean, while it is, you know, it's crazy that it didn't win, but it was nominated, you know, for Best Picture, Best Actor, Supporting Actor, Editing, Sound Mixing, Adapted Screenplay. Like, those are all, you know, you've got, I mean, Best Picture and Acting, Editing, Sound, and Writing. So that you've got four different categories right there.
And they're very, as you said, you know,
spread out and different.
Spread out, yeah. Yeah. So, huh.
It's not like you just have Best Picture, your act, you know, there's other movies that you watch and you're like, oh, the acting was good, but the story wasn't that great. I mean, they just, I mean, it's one of the best, like, and I say this because of people like you explaining to me and Joey from the first episode, it's just one of the best adapted screenplays.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And obviously the fact that you have two of the best screenwriters worked on it, you know, like, but at the same time, you look at that, and you look at then the great cast, and you have a great director, but then sometimes that doesn't work out, just like in sports, when you have a certain lineup, and you're just like, oh, wow, like, look at this, I mean, look at the Yankees in between, you know, their 2000 win, their 2009 win, when they were getting Randy Johnson.
Giambi being a good example.
Right? Giambi being, yeah, exactly.
No, you're right. Sometimes just the chemistry doesn't click. So
yeah.
You could throw a bunch of talented people at something that's not necessarily going to work.
Yeah, and baseball is just one of those interesting sports that, you know, like, while it's, you know, you look at football and you're like, okay, there's an offense and a defense. And while obviously in baseball there is an offense and a defense, it's so interesting that while it is a team sport, it is a very, you know, singular, like, you know, a player up at bat, like, it's him and the pitcher,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, it's very mano a mano, but at the same time, then this movie also does show you can be a team player because you have to understand, like, I can take a walk now or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing about baseball in terms of, like, the team element. The team element is not like a lot of sports, like, get yourself in position and keep moving,
yeah.
you know. It's
yeah,
it's
quarterback needs someone to throw to.
Yeah. It's an approach you have to take as a team.
Yeah. As Giselle said, you know, Tom can't just, you know, throw to himself. Yeah.
One of your all-time favorites, Tom Brady.
Yeah, exactly. A wife complaining about a 6-time Super Bowl winning, you know.
Mind you, a wife who's incredibly rich.
Who's richer than her husband,
yeah.
as we looked up, and it's true. Ladies and gentlemen, Giselle, what's her... Well, Giselle Brady. Giselle Brady. What a horror. That does sound like a fucking New England Boston name.
He's not even from, like, Boston.
No, I
know. He's from California.
Is it? No, that makes sense. He played in Michigan.
He's from Northern California.
He just
moved
moved across the fucking map.
Yeah, I don't think he's... I think he's from the Oaklandish area.
Yeah. Oh, this is a great
yeah.
part of the movie.
This is a great thing. I was like a nod to the book. So many of the book's chapters and writings are little phone calls like this where he's like... I almost say tricking GMs into getting what he wants.
Yes.
And it's happening in like an hour span. And I believe that Shapiro conversation in the book... And I could be wrong, book readers. The one that we saw earlier... That's another one of these. So it's good that we actually see a phone one, too.
Yeah.
Because I haven't really heard of a GM visiting another GM at his office. They have GM meetings. Like, they have, like, a convention almost.
Oh, okay.
And they'll meet there.
Interesting.
Like,
yeah.
In the off-season, they have, like, one or two.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that I think, you know, you're in a club now, you know, like,
yeah,
it's, I'm sure they have plenty of their own.
Because, yeah, there's not many jobs available for, like, ex-GMs, so generally.
I mean, how many teams are there in MLB? 30?
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, like.
There's 30 jobs, but.
Yeah.
You know what you do, your assistants are usually up-and-coming guys or ex-GMs.
Interesting.
So you need to be friendly with these guys. You can't screw too many over.
Yeah, you can't burn the, you can't burn bridges
because they're going to hire you.
Yeah.
As an assistant.
This is just like the Kevin Costner Browns movie, which has come to fruition in this off season. What was that movie called?
Draft Day.
Draft Day. Yeah.
That movie's funny because. Well, for a lot of reasons, but like I feel like the NFL wanted to do something like Moneyball, or that one's definitely after this one, I would say.
Not too long. I'll look that up.
But it's totally not. It's like that one's such bullshit. There's such bullshit in that movie.
Yeah.
It's also not a true story, and this one is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that too, and it was funny because I think that was like the year before Johnny Manziel.
Oh, really?
So it's just like very. I mean, now the Browns are doing some.
We'll
right
see. They've had a good off season, but like we said, with you know, you can get all the good players or all the good actors.
Yeah, on paper, right now the Browns should
be
like,
a really good team.
Should not only make the playoffs, but definitely like win hopefully some playoff games.
I mean, let's hope they. I mean, for their sake,
well,
they should
make
the playoffs.
But again, like yes, but I hope. I wish nothing but the most mediocre for Odell now. It's middle of the road.
This is too. I like. I think this is in the trailer. Not really.
Oh, Ivan
yes.
Reitman directed Draft Day.
Oh my god,
it's so bad. Yeah, that's such a trailer.
Yeah, like we're yes. And I like how he's wearing the hats now.
Yeah, he's like
he's buying in.
Yeah, exactly. He's laying roots. He's.
And how many films do we get to see the behind the scenes of how a team is built? It's usually right. You're asking me about baseball films. Mm-hmm. It's usually.
This, yeah, 2014 was draft day,
okay.
So 3 years after this.
It's usually about the players in the field, you know? This is about the people who put the players in the field.
Yeah. The puppeteers.
Though, I mean, we see some team building in A League of Their Own. And...
Well, just the fact right now we're getting to see, yeah, I know he's about to say it, yeah, but, you know.
Mike Magnanti here.
Yeah, and we're getting to see him, you know, putting on the brace and, you know, it's a very...
And this is the player, I don't know if you remember, this is one of the most heartbreaking parts of the book, that he cuts him from the team.
Yeah.
And he only needed, like, something like 2 more weeks to get a pension.
Oh.
I still think about that sometimes, and I think, me personally, I would just let him play the 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I would have just let him
you
play
can't, you really can't, like, just...
Find a
put
way.
Put him on some kind of...
No, he has to be actively playing.
Oh, okay.
But... And then he never got picked up by another team.
Oh, my God.
So he never got his pension.
He hates Billy Bean, though.
Oh, my God.
If Billy Bean is ever killed, he's top of the list. He's Buscemi in Billy Madison with his list.
Oh, honestly, I still think about this sometimes. And I'm like, I couldn't do that. And I think it helps show that Billy Bean is not perfect. Mm,
yeah, exactly. Like telling him to go...
You know, so this guy can make the team, and like I hope he doesn't even know.
Hola, señor. Yeah, it was the whole crazy thing, right? Wasn't his team was coming out to play? Ricardo.
Oh yeah, so, yeah, possible. Also, he was the player he tried to get from the Indians at
the
beginning. The
streak.
Yeah, I love that crazy things are now happening in Oakland.
Yeah.
And I remember that.
And has... Wait, this was not beaten, right?
What?
It was in recent years? This...
I don't think it's been beaten.
Oh, I thought for some reason there was...
Maybe, actually.
I thought... Didn't the Cubs?
Let me see.
I thought there was a team recently that beat
it's
this.
It's possible, actually.
But this was the first... I mean, since it was like...
Yeah, this and it was so much more memorable than... Obviously, we can't even remember it. Let's see. Longest... That is just so hard to do.
Murderer's Row. What a cool... I love when there's cool nicknames.
Oh, okay. The Cleveland Indians beat it by 2 in 2017.
Okay, it was, yeah, that was that
There's year. Another team.
That was that year, 2017 was the Indians versus the Cubs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay.
Gotcha. I do remember that now. That was a good season for them.
Yeah.
There's other teams that did in, like, the 1800s and stuff.
Well, yeah, wasn't this when they did 20, who did they beat? Didn't they beat, like, the New York...
Well, it was an American League record they set, because the other teams were National League.
Yeah.
But, the Indians have 22 straight wins.
Yeah, it was since this team,
That's the Philadelphia A's.
Oh, okay, never mind.
So that was when they beat their franchise record.
Do we really get any more scenes from our main man? Like, you know, he was just, like, high-five. I don't really think...
I think we see... there's that great moment... Well, yes. There's the great moment in the last game when he's watching Hattaberg.
Oh, yeah, and that look. Hit. Yeah.
And that look is...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was like, this is what makes Hoffman great, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have that many lines in this. He's got a fair amount of screen time.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that many lines, but his looks, his mannerisms, his presence.
Yeah.
Every time he's on the screen, you realize he's on the screen.
Yeah. No, and this is, and I'm sure I'm just, Jolton Joe DiMaggio, my favorite baseball player ever.
I remember you used to be a huge fan of him when he was coming up, Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah.
You were like, this guy's going to be
It's because he's my grandpa's favorite
gonna
player.
Be a star.
It's because the guy fucked. He was a World War II, you know, hero. Not hero, but, you know.
Italian.
Yeah.
Like you, proud Italian.
But I'm sure I'm just repeating a lot of things I said in the regular episode we did for this. But, you know, like, people have favorite smells, favorite, you know, like, one of my favorite things ever is, and they just, it's that moment where when PSH has that look, the crack of a bat.
Oh, yeah.
To a, you know, just bat connecting to a ball.
It's a great sound.
In that proper fucking, you know, home run.
And isn't it crazy that in a loud stadium, far away, you could still hear that?
It's amazing.
It's crazy.
It's almost like as loud, it's more piercing than the fans cheering after it. It's just that singular, I mean, it's just two things colliding to make this singular.
Two very fast things colliding.
Yes. And from, you know, like leather meets fucking wood.
Sometimes you can even hear the leather of the
man wood. Versus horse. To quote Spike Jonze didn't direct this movie, but Spike, to quote a Spike Jonze movie, right? But, yeah, just to create just one of my favorite, and it's not, I mean, again, you're just far more the baseball fan and invested in baseball, but there's just certain things that, and like he says towards the end of this movie, that's what makes baseball romantic. Oh, I love it. This is, and he turns
the silences,
yeah.
Right?
That's why I was nominated for sound mixing.
That's so cool.
Right? Sound mixing or editing. There's a difference. Sound mixing.
And, like, just the idea that, like, yeah, I should be in a facet.
Do you think this happened? Did this happen? Because this is such a movie thing. It's such a cinematic thing.
I really, really, really wish.
That this game is the one that he decided. I'm not saying to, like, exactly it happened, like, he made the fucking turn off the highway like that. But did he...
Like,
always not.
Yeah.
Did he not pay attention?
I'm sure he paid
games.
Some games. I don't think he didn't see every game. You know, but I don't.
Yeah.
Know.
Even Peter, like the fact that Peter then sees him standing there, like it's just this is a moment, and I'm fine with it. But I'm just very curious. I'm just very curious because of how I believe. Because I mean, that's the whole thing against sports, and you have a season like this. I will call it cinematic, and so it does. Adhere towards being shown on a big screen.
And baseball's such a superstitious game.
Yes.
Like, all sports.
Yeah, all sports, but, yeah,
baseball. Because of the pauses and because of the silences, like you were saying, how they mix it is accurate.
Oh, just
to
the way those guys, I mean, all athletes, like, have their things, but just seeing the way, I mean.
I'm even hurting watching this. I know what happens.
You know what? That's actually probably, like, a one good, like, thing about, like, the Yankees in the sense of, like, that maybe helps conquer some people's superstitions that they have to have a clean face. So, like, any superstition that comes with, like, growing out your beard or anything like that, you know?
Well, you can have a mustache on the Yankees.
You can. You can have, yeah, you can have a good old goose mustache.
It's funny because the A's in the 70s... had the opposite rule.
Or Donnie Batts' mustache, classic
mustache.
You
had to have facial hair in the A's in the 70s. Well, you were paid a bonus for having it.
Really?
They wanted to be. They wanted to be like the, like, counter, the opposite team. Yeah. That's why you get like Raleigh Fingers with the handlebar mustache.
Yeah. Fucking Donnie Batts.
And sorry, I believe there I accidentally pressed the mute button. No, like briefly, guys, so if you hear me just in the background for like 2 seconds.
Oh, okay.
I apologize.
Yeah, I did that earlier too, and I repeated myself. It was just, we can mute the mics for a second when we're sipping on our beverages so you don't hear us slurping away. If you want to know that, you should go and listen to What Am I Eating or Chewing?
Sorry. What Am I Chewing? Yeah,
sorry,
What Am I Chewing?
Yeah.
Whistle like Thinking Sister Show.
Yeah, their new artwork I'm into.
Yeah, Kara does great artwork for that
show.
I would
love
the Cage Club Podcast Network.
Yes.
CageClub.me.
That's CageClub.me. Fox.
What?
Fox.
I'm just kidding. And I love this game because it's like all his guys. So the Mets, like, they won the last two, like I said, they won their first two games of the season. And it's been by guys that this new general manager, like, just acquired. The new closer he got two saves in the last 2 days. Robinson Cano, who's on the team, got the only two RBIs of the opening day, who he just acquired, you know. Peter Wait, Alonso. The
Robbie Cano?
Yeah, he's on the Mets now.
Wow.
The prospect they...
He was on Seattle, right?
Yeah. They
After the Yankees? Yeah.
The prospect they got that he decided to bring up got all the big hits yesterday. His other free agent signing got the big hits. And I can just
imagine... That's such a great feeling,
right?
Right?
How rewarding is that? And again, this is early for the Mets, but just multiply that by so much for Billy Bean here.
Yeah.
Like, and his gamble. His gamble is like... And again, this is their World Series, so they don't end up making it, but yeah. It's not the World Series. But still,
Kansas
it's
City,
so dramatic.
Paul Rudd's team.
Old uniforms when they used more black.
I'm not, this is not me, this is like my lack of, like, my bad memory, not trying to salt in the wound.
No,
it was Mets versus Kansas City.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
But I don't hate Kansas City for it.
No, I just, yeah, and that's just such a, I love the whole Paul Rudd had a kegger at his mom's house afterwards.
I wasn't like, sometimes you hate the team that beats you. I wasn't happy at the time, but I'm not like...
Well, yeah, that's how it was in, so what would we say, 2003 Yankees Marlins. Now they're in Miami or whatever, but I always had a love for the Marlins because that was, when I was young, the first game I ever went to was Yankees Oriole game, like I said, but then I went to a Marlins game. With my grandpa, and it was just like a, I don't know. I always loved the Marlins. Always had a soft spot for the Marlins.
And now Jeter controls them.
Exactly. But like I said, it's Miami, so I don't know. I lost.
But you're not a Miami hater.
No. I'm just saying, like, they're not. You know, it's they made some moves.
It's not that far.
It was so long. Where did they play?
It was like halfway between Miami and Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
So it was just like in the suburbs of Miami.
That's why they're just called
the Florida
Marlins. That's always, there's so many things involved in sports that just fascinates me. Like, you know, the decision, so they're the Florida Marlins, then they move to Miami. The fact that we have the New England Patriots,
well,
you know.
They're
like,
usually strategies depending on who's paying for shit, right? Like, I think for Florida, that was the first team in Florida, so they wanted to get the whole state aboard too, not just like the location. Like, just
first
like,
team in Florida?
Yeah, they were there before. The first baseball team in Florida.
Ah.
They were there before the Rays.
Okay.
The Marlins are 93 and the Rays were 98. But then Miami pretty much funded the money to build them a stadium. So they felt like dicks not calling themselves Miami.
Yeah.
New England, that's because Foxborough is pretty far from Boston.
They
were the Boston
Patriots.
Yeah,
exactly. But still, they could be called the Massachusetts, you know, they decided
But it's smarter because... They're actually closer to Providence than they are
Providence.
To Boston. So,
I know, but it's just one of those.
Yeah, they could have if they wanted to. Yeah. They could have stayed the Boston Patriots. Who cares? The San Francisco 49ers are much closer to San Jose now, but they stayed the 49ers because.
Oh, yeah, well. So many. You said, like, maybe might be useless information, but to me it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Just the changes and teams keeping names, moving to a different, you know, city, or, you know, just all,
even
all
color changes.
Yeah, color. Yeah, exactly. Or the fact, wasn't there, like, weren't the Eagles up for, like, as far as being allowed to change their uniforms, but definitely they won't now because, like, because they won a Super Bowl and their superstition.
That happens a lot. That's certainly why the Patriots are still...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's still the, like, very...
And but some teams do, like, the Diamondbacks won that World Series we were talking about in, like, purple, and their colors are red now. So,
yeah. Ooh,
yes,
there we go.
Yes.
There's
it's Hatterberg, the lights, the eyes, how everyone in the stadium watches.
Yeah,
oh, Hoffman, our guy.
Goosebumps.
Great. Yeah, Kyle actually does have goosebumps. And his hand is on my knee again. And this, just like, he can't even believe it. He's he's not like Billy was right, but he's just overtaken by the moment.
Yeah.
Because he can't
believe
it.
Whoa, it's just a tremendous, oh, God, just goosebumps. It's just... It's romantic.
There's nothing more romantic than there's no sport more romantic than baseball.
No, there really
maybe
isn't.
Maybe like golf because you're essentially hitting the ball in a park.
No, but talk about like a solo fair. I understand you're competing against somebody, but it's just.
But like you can't beat the locations.
That is purely you.
Like, I'm on a bench.
Like you can like there's no like if it's you and the course like that's. That's,
there's a romance in that, but it's a different kind of.
You like
a brother.
But I'm just
romance.
Saying, like,
you
really,
never had
like,
any
I mean,
in real life.
No.
So, like, brotherhood is important.
Yeah.
To you.
But like I'm saying, but like you know, like in football, you've got something called the 12th man. You know,
yeah.
Like there's so many, there's other factors in all a lot of other sports, but he's like.
Of course, we're doing motions here.
Like,
and
you know what this is?
And
the show I'm binge-watching right now, and I don't know why it took me so long, but Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Mm-hmm.
So funny.
So good, so
and,
good.
And Andre Brower, who's
just
amazing. How he hasn't won an Emmy like for it or anything.
Oh, he hasn't?
I'm pretty sure he hasn't.
That show doesn't get a lot of love by the award.
No, and didn't they switch networks?
Yeah, but NBC's better.
Yeah. But, there's this one episode where Andre Brower, like, he did something, and then everyone else is like, oh, she's not going to like that, and then, like, it's this balloon arch for a wedding, and then he has one in his office at the end of the show, and the character that was going to get married in the episode comes in, she's like, wow, that's magnificent, and he just goes, vindication! And that's like what this, like, like you said, with the game the other, like, all the new play, how great does that feel?
It must feel so good.
Been one of the most rewarding, and this is, they'll erase us. But then right away, just like, not pessimism, but just realism.
Well, especially in baseball, you gotta move on to the next day.
Yeah.
You know? Even when you win the World Series, not that I would know, but even when you win the World Series, you just got to start building for next year.
Yeah, which is, I mean, you see some teams, and you see, well, I mean, so what? You know, you just, like, I mean, with baseball and recently, you had the Astros win, and I mean, they were in the playoffs last year, but then disappointing.
Yeah,
as far
they're
as,
still very good, though, because they won young, and, like, they built the right way.
But, I mean, so with football, it's just always crazy to see, you know, like, you have a team... You're like, oh, Jacksonville is getting good. Like, wow. Like, and then, boop. But then you have a team like the fucking Patriots that win and then get rid of everybody and then win the next fucking year.
Because that's similar to Billy Beane's thing. Not that he's won the World Series, which the playoffs is very fluky, but that happens all the time with him. He gets rid of the entire team, starts over, and starts winning again.
And I know people disagree with me, but it helps because of the division they're in.
The A's?
No, the Patriots.
Oh my God. No comment. No comment. Because I don't believe that. Every day Eddie Guardado here, former Twins closer. I just always like that nickname. Every day Eddie.
That's it, yeah. I love just like, you know, they go from the highest, you know, point of their story, then like the next game they show is just the hit and the catch.
What a screwy playoffs too. Like, the A's played the Twins, and the Angels played the Yankees, and the Angels got the Yankees out in the first round. And then you have, like, the A's and the Twins are usually, like, Yankee cannon fodder, you know? Yankees always kill them in the first round.
But you have to play each other. We do play them a lot.
The Twins and the A's. It happens a lot.
Yeah. But, so many playoffs.
I don't think the A's or Twins have ever beaten the Yankees in the in this time. I don't, maybe in the 70s they did, but like certainly they.
Like
the
I remember
gobble gobble Yankee.
I know in 2009, I think
this year played the A's in the one game wild card playoff and beat them.
Yeah, I think I think in 2009 the Yankees played both the Twins and the Angels.
The Angels too, yeah. Okay, how happy will you be personally in real life? Let's say your Yankees don't win, and let's say even for me, my Mets don't win, and the A's aren't playing them, if Billy Beane actually gets his World Series one day.
I would go out and buy a jersey out of happiness for him. I would totally get a
Billy Beane. I call the A's my American League team, and it's really because of this book and this movie, because I want to see Billy Beane succeed.
I am a big believer that, you really can't root for, another, or especially, own, jersey or a hat for another team.
Well,
in your conference or in your...
I'll go with division, right? I don't really care about... If it's someone you're not playing regularly...
So who's in your division?
Phillies.
Yeah.
Or your city or your division, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because a Giant fan shouldn't wear a Jets thing, you know?
No.
Phillies, Braves, Nationals, Mets, and Marlins.
So they had only one day to shoot at Fenway.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was as you can see, it was
such a romantic place.
A gloomy, rainy day. I know. Fuck that place. I love it. I hate it so much. Like, they just...
And you know what? Like, I know you haven't been to the Philly Stadium, and trust me, I hate the Phillies with the passion, probably more than any team. But that stadium's a really good food stadium, and it's a nice stadium. It's not... It's new.
Yeah, it's just filled with jerk-offs. Yeah.
Can't edit here, folks. Can't edit. Sorry, Philadelphia.
Hashtag raw. I love it. It's really fun. Like the way he says, the Coliseum, but I just love, I understand the A's play, the Coliseum, but it's just like the way that he's like, but this is a stadium. Like it just, that dialogue almost transcends to like a level of like the Roman Coliseum. Just the way he's talking about it. It's just like, this is where gladiators fight, like.
Yeah, unfortunately, when we talk about stadiums, and this is not me taking a shot at the Yankees, but everyone seems to agree with this. The Yankees didn't build the new Yankee Stadium ballparky enough.
They fucked up.
It's too stadium-y, because they're very corporate. They could have easily... They didn't have to, make silly quirks and make it not look like Yankee Stadium, but they could have easily made it less... There's a freaking... The main place to get food is called the Pepsi Food Court. There's no view of the game there.
This is a word that I also use for MetLife, and just a word that it's cold.
It's cold. And you know what? Citi Field, when it came out, got a lot of bad reviews, but over time, they've put a lot more Met stuff in. They've certainly upgraded the food, and they've really worked hard on the fan experience.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe because they're not watching
the
team play.
Is something... There was... And then, but in comparison to Shea, there was nowhere else to go but up.
Yeah,
like versus like I don't
Shea
know.
Shea is, I would say, almost the same as the Oakland Coliseum here, and they're still playing there.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like it just sucks. Like I fucking hate that the Yankees. I have nothing but resentment that like they go and they build the stadium that they did when they had such a historical place. And I know I understand there's like so many laws and sort of zoning, and there needed to be like then something built where like. But I in my head like the dream situation would have been keep the old stadium because it's not like now there's just a park. No, what's there?
A field?
A park? Yeah, park. Like, they should have kept the old stadium, like, right there, or, like, torn some of it down and made it, like, open until, like, you could have played, like, had a public park inside of it, and then also, let's face it, you know, like, the Yankees, like, the most successful sports team, like, in history, or, you know, definitely one of the, could have had a whole museum for themselves in part of there, could have made it, I don't know, just done something, and then you just go and you have, like, a place like Fenway still existing that's just, or even, forgive me, why am I blanking Wrigley. Out? Thank you, Wrigley. Yeah, it's just...
yeah, but, you know...
And then they go and they fucking build that cold, like,
that's
it's a hollow version of what Yankee, the old Yankee Stadium.
It's a very, like, corporate, Robert Kraft style, like, white collar, blue shirts.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of, in fucking Blazing Saddles, of just the fucking people riding into town and being tricked by just the facade of the outside of the buildings. And that's what the new Yankees... And, like, this is coming from someone... I mean, I was, you know... I'm a Yankees fan because I was born into a Yankees family.
Yeah, but this is
family.
Consensus among Yankees fans.
Yeah, exactly.
Again, like, the product on the field is going to be better. Criticizing that.
The only team that I root for that I enjoy their venue is Prudential Center, The Rock for the Devils. That's the only... because I'm not a basketball person. If I was going to... Back in the day, I would have said the Nets, but they moved to Brooklyn, so now I'll say the Knicks. But I'm not a basketball person, so I have
the arenas are, you can't do much with an arena.
But I've always wanted to square Martin, so haven't made a Rush Hour 2 reference in a while. Or is that first? No, that's the second one.
That's second one. The end of the second one. So yeah, this is look. Billy has gotten acclaim. Billy can manage the Red Sox, and by the way, the Red Sox at this point, they're going to win the next year. They're ready to win a World Series.
Yeah,
they just need a guy to put them over the top. And I'm sure he's gonna take Peter with him. You know, it's not like he would leave Peter.
No, Peter's his non-sexual boy toy.
But he, you know, he decides not to.
Impressive. That's yeah. Fuck. Like that's what I want people to say about like where my teams play.
Oh,
impressive.
You.
No. Like, impressive. Like, it's just... I love when, like, a single word perfectly describes something. You know exactly what he meant without even seeing what we just saw in those scenes at, you know, in Boston. You know exactly what he meant by impressive. And then you go and get Peter looking at what they offered him fucking financially. I love that we learn that. They don't say the... No, they do, right?
They might not, but they just said it would make him the highest GM in sports.
Yeah, but I think they say it in the credit.
They might.
Yeah, so it's just great that they don't, you know, they just give that factoid of, you know, it would make him the highest paid GM.
See, I made one decision in my life based on money. I swore I wouldn't do it again.
Ugh! This is the most...
And then he makes a good argument, like... It's not about the money necessarily in Boston. Yeah, you're getting paid a lot, but you're going to win there. And you're going to have ownership who's going to support you. And it's a classic franchise.
Yeah. Ugh, this is just... It hurt. I don't know if it's the acid from the iced coffee I had or the story. It's just... it hurts. What a... God.
Think about it. They're still there. I keep saying that, but I can't believe it almost.
I really want... Oh, my God, this is just...
You get it, you get it.
I know, but just everything, the fact that we're watching... I mean, this came out in 2011, so we're talking... It came out, what, 9 years after the story takes place.
But it's
and then we're now almost the same amount of time watching it, you know, right now, since, you know, of the movie to watching it now, of, you know, this story to the movie, and the fact that he's saying, a dump, I really want to win in this place, he's still there, still the same stadium, it's just...
It still hasn't happened, you're right. But you know what, it kind of makes it more romantic. What was that movie with Jimmy Fallon, Fever Pitch, with the Red Sox?
Yeah.
And while they were filming, they won the World Series?
Yes.
If they would have... And I always say thank God, because if they would have won the next year, that movie means nothing.
Yeah.
You know? At least they were able to, like, put it in there. It's... This is the Jeremy Brown guy. So they actually do include it. I forgot.
Yeah.
But it's just not a big part of the film, as it is.
Yeah. But this is, you know, again, my favorite... This is probably my favorite moment of the movie. Just this? Like this... Well, just the explanation of it all. Oh. And just saying how, you know...
I completely forgot about this part. Yeah.
Again, just like great lessons. He's going to go for it. What was the tagline for this movie? Was there one?
There always is. There always is. Let's see. Moneyball. Based on a true story.
It's a great tagline.
Yeah, that's really the only one I'm finding.
Yeah.
The book's tagline was good. Let me try to see. Moneyball book.
Look, even Billy's like kind of like tearing up a little bit. I mean, at least
I would be too.
His eyes are, you know.
So the book tagline is "The Art of Winning the Unfair Game."
How can you not be romantic about baseball? I'm sorry, what was it?
"The Art of Winning the Unfair Game" is the book.
I mean, yeah, that's a good tagline. But I just love the whole he hit a home run and he didn't even realize it.
Yeah,
you know, like that's just such a great line. And
so, you know, color me wrong, they did bring in Jeremy Brown.
You're a good egg. Isn't it just such a, also, like, I mean, just coming from a total detached, you know, just as a fan, such a great, yeah, the fact, yeah, like, this is most likely, yeah, I would bet money this didn't happen.
No.
but isn't it such a, like, amazing feeling just as a fan to get to stand on a field?
Oh, my God.
Right?
That's what we bring up, fever pitch. One of my favorite lines in that is, I guess, Drew Barrymore. She's the
love interest, yeah.
She runs on the field to, like, you know, get his attention.
Yeah.
And the first thing he asks, he's not like, oh, my God, you did that. He's like, how did the field, was it squishy?
It was grass. Well, it's just even, I mean, this always confused me a little bit.
I love this.
What?
What confused you?
No, not this.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, we can, yeah. We'll share.
This makes me cry. Like, it really makes me tear up.
Yeah.
I want to be a divorced father.
God. Do you know, and I know we both love this artist, that originally, in the screenplay, it was written, the song that was going to play at the end was Against the Wind.
Really?
Bob Seger? Yeah.
I mean, I love that song. I love Bob Seger, but I think this is a little bit...
Well, it just works on so much more because it's the daughter, the lyrics.
Just
I mean,
enjoy the show, you know, what people call baseball.
But I hate that. You're such a loser, Dad. This makes me feel so bad.
She's not... Come on. You think she's teasing him.
No, I know, but it makes me feel bad still.
Why?
I don't know.
You think he's like, oh, what the fuck?
Well, it definitely makes him, like, think a little bit more, probably.
That he's a loser?
I don't know, just contemplating things.
They have a playful relationship. We see it in the movie.
I know, but it's, I don't know.
Like, you're a dork, Dad, haha. You don't think that your children one day are going to think that you're a bit of a loser or a dork?
Kids? I don't want them to verbally sing it in a melodic fashion.
Billy Bean, there we go. Turned down the Red Sox offer for $12,500,000. Still a lot of money. For general manager.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the average salary.
2 years later, the Red Sox won their first World Series since 1918.
Ugh. Ugh. One of the saddest movies of all time.
And that's so true. Billy is still trying to win the last game of the season.
And again, this movie came out in 2011, and it's almost...
And it's about 2001, or 2002.
It's about 2002, and we are now in 2019. So
final thoughts on... Well, Moneyball, we've waxed poetic about. Final thoughts on Hoffman's performance?
It's just... It's, you know, it's just, like... I don't want to call it subdued, but it's just
understated is what.
Yeah, understated, and like you said, but like when he's in the background and he's, it's, you know, it very reminds me of in a way. I mean, not like the character, but like it's similar to one of his earliest roles, and obviously a role we covered already on this, Scotty J. In the sense that like it's a small part. I mean, that's much more of an ensemble movie, but he's still integral. And his presence is made, and his, you know, mannerisms are there and are important, and it's just, you know, and like you said, like he becomes like Billy's foil in the movie, and so something that's, you know, he is necessary, but at the same time, if someone else played him, there's a much better chance that you wouldn't talk about that character.
Yeah, 100%.
The fact that we've got Philip Seymour Hoffman, an Academy Award winning actor, and he won Best Actor with Bennett Miller, the director of this film, for Capote, and you have him after that being a lead actor in a lot of movies, or playing even, you know, beefier supporting characters. But this is definitely a smaller character for, you know, like later in his career. But it's just, it's still, you can watch him and you learn so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One thing I wrote down.
And it's really cool that I got to collaborate with Brad Pitt.
Yeah. I mean, we said we almost saw it on Ides of March.
Yeah. Yeah. No. We wouldn't have, because he was up, him and he was almost Paul Zara.
Oh, okay.
He was Philip Seymour Hoffman replaced Brad Pitt.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Movie would have been too pretty with Brad Pitt and Daddy Goss.
too much.
And Clooney.
And Clooney, yeah.
Clooneyster, as I call him. I've never called him that before.
The Clooneyster. All right, that brings us to the end of the film. So, Kyle, as the credits roll, tell us what's been going on with Foodie Films.
Foodie Films, it's a lot of great things. So since the last time we did this, not the, you know, are we calling our in between episodes anything? Have we referred to them as, but our little, you know, 15th middle of the month, yeah, off stops, but our little, you know, catch ups with you guys between these monthly episodes. I probably shared it then, but have had some great guests on, one of them being Pat LaFrieda of LaFrieda Meat Purveyors, one of the biggest meat distributors to New York and in the country. Great episode, so please check that out. Very insightful. I'm changing those. Those are being called the first cut episodes, these episodes where I have people that are very established in the industry and just have so much that I want to talk to them about the food industry, that we really highlight that, and then, but we still bring movies into it by talking. With that, I'm doing, we talked two famous food scenes. So with the Pat LaFrieda episode, we talked two very different scenes, but the Bill the Butcher, when he's teaching Leo, this is a wound, this is a kill, this is a wound. and the other scene being the very ridiculous scene, but recommended by Pat LaFrieda, and like one of his coworkers reminded him of it, the Daddy, would you like some sausage from Freddy Got Fingered? So two very different scenes, but that's what's great, that you have two, Gangs of New York, Scorsese movie, Daniel Day-Lewis, then Tom fucking Green, and Rip Torn, and a silly song, and a silly, silly movie. So, yeah, that was a great episode, and just still putting those in-between weeks video content on our YouTube channel, so please check that out. Please subscribe to obviously the podcast and to the YouTube channel, and that and comment and share, and that's just how, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, we're watching a baseball movie. It's not a numbers game. That's not what I'm in it for. But I want to know what people are into and what you guys are enjoying, what you're not enjoying, and just to make a while I'm having fun, I want it to be a great to bring in the word cold again, a great product for you guys. So please share, and hope you're just enjoy the show.
And, of course, I host High School Slumber Party podcast where me and some friends look back at our teenage years through the lens of some iconic high school-centric films. So basically, talk about the high school movies we watched. And for April, this is coming out April 1st, obviously, tomorrow. So, or today in your time, or whenever you listen to it, really. But April 5th, we are talking about Christine.
Ooh.
So, Pet Sematary, Stephen King's. Well, there's an original Pet Sematary, but the new Pet Sematary comes out this Friday. Mm-hmm. So we thought it a good idea to do another Stephen King film, Christine.
Supposedly it's been a very horrifying movie, the new Pet Sematary.
Christine, actually, pretty good movie. It's about a haunted car, so you wouldn't think so.
Yeah, but it's a fun movie.
It is a fun movie. We have Hackers the next week, also a fun movie. And then, you know, I gotta see. We'll be doing an Olsen Twin film, New York Minute. That's coming up soon, so a lot of Olsen Twin talk.
In a New York Minute.
Yeah, that's the song from the film. No, but a lot of good stuff. I'm coming up on a year soon.
Wow, Mazel Tov.
Also, the 50th episode, I think.
In
April.
And wait, and since the last episode, with March 1st, yeah, the last time was a year since. I'm sorry, 2 years since P.S. I Love Hoffman started, and it's in April will be a year since P.S. I Love Hoffman ended. But you know, it's just
our first run, yeah,
our first run. But it's great that you guys. That's why we're
enjoying still here,
making
we're still
this,
doing it because we love Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
And before we let you guys go, you can check both those shows out at cageclub.me or wherever you get your podcasts. But funny, okay. So the credits ended.
Yeah.
And now you're on the Blu-ray menu.
Yeah.
And the previews, Ides of March, which of course.
Yes.
People who like Ides of March probably like this film. But Jack and Jill, one of your favorite films, is a preview of here.
One of my favorite films. I love Pacino in that movie. And he sings about, like, it's a great food scene. I'm definitely going to include it someday. I think Adam Sandler, I don't know, in that movie, works in advertising or something like that, and he's trying to land Al Pacino singing for Dunkin' Donuts, and it's called Dunkachino, and it's
speaking of films, we won't be talking about Jack and Jill
no
next month, but
unfortunately not.
But of course, you know, what movies are the Hoff fans gonna vote for the May 1st P.S. I Still Love Hoffman edition?
Yeah.
So we thought two good ones here. We thought two that, well, we never mind watching a Hoffman film, but two that we definitely are in the mood to see. And the first one is Almost Famous. So, Kyle, tell us a little bit about Almost Famous or what it means to you and Hoffman.
So interesting thing with that. That's he's playing yet another real-life character.
True, yeah.
Lester
Bangs.
Yeah, Lester Bangs, writer, critic for Cream magazine. And it's just a great...
A lot of first-time people. I mean, a lot of first exposure to Hoffman.
Yeah, but it's just it's a great... How this is a great, if not the best baseball movie, that might be, like, the best, like, music.
Certainly
like,
up there.
Rock, you know,
certainly
like, movie. And so, yeah, he's just...
Some people say it's a high school film. He is in high school.
Yeah, I would... If I was you, I would totally cover it.
Probably cover it on my show.
Maybe you should queue it up for May 1st. I don't know, if you have time.
Well, if that wouldn't have
Yeah, if that wins... I'm sorry, yeah, if that wins the vote.
But then do I have to have you...
No, it's okay.
I feel like that would mean we talked about the film three times.
But you can have... I know Mike loves the movie. Anyway, but yeah, it's just Almost Famous. Obviously, it's just... I don't know, it's one of those movies...
Love it. I mean, we finish our show
with the line, stay uncool, and it's just... It was a great movie to see when we saw it. It came out in 2000, so we're practically, you know, we're around the same age as, like, the main character of the movie, and it's just a great coming-of-age movie, and our main man plays such a great mentor figure in the movie, so it's just one of my favorite movies of all time, and like I said, just one of the best, like, movies about music, and, yeah, just everyone in that movie... is fantastic.
Absolutely. And the other movie that you Hoff fans can vote for, The Talented Mr. Ripley. Another early Hoff fan.
Tommy. Mike Manzi, how's the peeping?
Tommy has the peeping. Another great early Hoffman role. One of his big breakout roles. Another film that a lot of people say it was the first time they saw him.
Yeah. It's just.
I think we got a good.
That's a good call because it was just announced recently that there's going to be a Talented Mr. Ripley TV show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because it is a book. I know with that episode with the other Cage Club co-founder Michael Manzi, we discussed like how there's been a couple other movies and there's a whole book series.
You know
so
what's funny?
Very curious to see who plays that character.
Michael Manzi, host of Third Time's a Charm, hadn't started Third Time's a Charm at that point. But you could already tell there he was curious.
Yes.
About the books.
Yeah.
On a film.
Just series and, yeah. You know, so
book
it makes
club,
sense.
So. But,
yeah.
That should be fun, too. So whichever one wins, whatever. I think we'll have a good time. So once again, it's
Almost Famous versus Talented Mr. Ripley.
And you can vote for that on our Facebook page, on our Twitter page.
You can comment on Instagram.
And our Instagram page by commenting. P.S. I love Hoffman everywhere. So Kyle, bring us out. Use that Almost Famous line.
All right, well, just like Billy Beane, stay uncool.
Let's go Mets.
I believe in miracles. Where you from? You sexy thing, you. I believe in miracles. Since you came along, you sexy thing. I needed you so